All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight.
All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here until 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. It is Monday, which means the Monday morning movie reviews are just around the corner. Eric Childress and Steve Procopi, we got all the new movies to review, and we'll also go through the weekend's box office results. That's coming up. It is Monday, which means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're going to be talking about movie trilogies. We're going to go through some of the best movie trilogies of all time. And if you want to jump in at any time, it's 312-981-7200. Do you ever wonder what some of those initials stand for, like CVS? Well, we've got all the answers to that, plus more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, it's at Nick D Show, and Facebook, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page as well. All right. Let's say hello to my producer. Tom is off this morning. He went away for the weekend up to Michigan. So Ben is filling in. Ben Anderson, how are you doing, Ben?
I'm doing pretty good, Nick.
Good. Well, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
It's been a while since you produced for me.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
Yeah. So Ben's here.
Yeah, and got some great topics lined up, too.
I'm excited. I hope so. So in the newsroom is he's back. It's Vic Vaughn. Vic was gone all of last week.
Yep.
Welcome back.
Thank you, sir. So good to be back.
How was your trip?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, it was great. It was so great. How long was I gone? What? It was less than 2 weeks, but it feels like it's been about 2 months, maybe.
Yeah.
So I was actually nervous before I got on the air. That's how long it felt like. But, man, what a good trip. Smoky Mountains, I fell in love with them.
Yeah.
And then we also fit in a really quick day trip to New York, and that was amazing because I'd never been to New York, so Manhattan was awesome.
I was talking to you off the air. I can't believe you'd never been to New York.
Yeah, I just never had a reason to go, I guess.
Yeah, it's a great town.
Gosh, I will be back.
Yeah,
I will go back there. But it's, it's amazing.
One day is not long enough.
No,
for New York.
It was a business trip, so we weren't planning to go and sightsee. You know, but we ended up fitting some of that in as well. The gentleman we went to see that for this project was very kindly offered his time to walk us around. Jeannie went with me, so we had just a really fun time in Manhattan.
Yeah, it's a great place.
So cool.
It is really, really great. I've been in New York many times, and I was telling you off the air that I was out there for 3 weeks with a play. I brought a play out there that I co-wrote and directed to the Fringe Festival, the New York Fringe Festival. So we were there for 3 weeks, and that's a long time, man. Because I love New York, but I don't know if I could live there because it's a bustling, crazy, intense place.
Electric, yes. And it can. I would assume it can wear on you after a while.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta, like you said, you could probably escape to the boroughs and to slow down a little.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're in Manhattan, we were on the Lower East Side for 3 weeks. I mean, that's where we were staying. And that's where our theater was.
Yeah.
The theater where we performed the play was down there. But the fest itself was 3 weeks long, and man, it just I was exhausted when I got home.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, as much walking as we did, too, because we hiked. And we didn't, you know, in the Smoky Mountains, we didn't really take part in Gatlinburg, which is the more commercial touristy section. We were up in the mountains the whole time and walked miles and miles and miles. And then, you know, flew home. And the very next morning, we're up at 4 a.m. on a flight to New York and walked all for several more hours, probably 3 or 4 more hours. But so the feet are tired, but the soul is full.
Yeah. Well, so. You know, that's the thing about New York is that you can walk everywhere in Manhattan. Obviously, you don't need a car. You can get around. There's a subway. You got taxis, and you can walk everywhere. And it's and the way that the city is set up, it's so easy to get around.
Right. Right.
So.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, you got to go back, spend some time there.
I plan on it. Yep, and, I plan on it.
See a Broadway show if you've got $500. If you got $500 in your back pocket to spare.
Right.
So, but yeah, no, it was interesting to be out there for that long. I mean, I've been there a bunch of times, and the last time I was there, it's been a really long time. The last time I was there, the World Trade Center was still up.
Yeah, so it was when Jeannie was there last, too.
That was a long time ago. It was 2001.
Like I said, we were in Manhattan, but I did get a glimpse of the building, the new one, Freedom Tower.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, it's amazing to see that, to look at it with your own eyes.
When we were there for that 3 weeks when the play was, this was in 99, one of my favorite memories of all time, they had every Tuesday in the summer, they used to have free concerts outside between the towers. And Alex Chilton, who's one of my favorite musicians and songwriters, who, Vic, I hope you can get into at some point. Alex Chilton played.
Mm.
And I'll never forget it. It was just one of my favorite memories of all time. Obviously, it's a bittersweet memory now.
Yeah, now, yeah. Oh, but, I can imagine. And so was that moment when I looked at it, which was from the top of a hotel in Manhattan. And I looked at it because that building, you know, the Twin Towers, that terrorist attack was what brought me back into work for the government. That's right after that happened. I felt compelled to go and serve again. Yeah. So I went and served for almost 5 more years.
Yeah.
And so to look at that, and for the first time since then, you know, was really emotional. It was cool.
And thanks for your service, man.
Oh, thank you, Nick. It's my privilege.
All right. Listen, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, Steve and Eric will be here, and we will review all the new movies. Everybody, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a jokey time. And we got the Monday morning movie reviews. Also, coming up, we're going to talk about movie trilogies and what do those initials stand for, like CVS. What does that stand for? And much more. Phone calls, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And also you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, it is Monday morning, and so that means we have the Monday morning movie reviews. So let's welcome Steve Procopi to the show. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
And Eric Childress. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Okay, good. Welcome back, everybody. We are here. It's Monday morning. So why don't we get started? Steve, why don't you tell us about Marianne and Leonard, Words of Love?
Okay, this is a really good week for docs in Chicago, as you're, I think, going to find out over the course of the next few minutes. Marianne and Leonard, it's almost inevitable that when a documentary filmmaker puts together a story that is a little bit more personal to that person, the resulting movie is probably going to touch us a little deeper, and that can certainly be said for this film and its director, Nick Broomfield, who in the past has made some films that I think border on sensationalistic and half-baked and maybe even exploitative, but in films like Kurt and Courtney and Biggie and Tupac, but in this film, this is like a celluloid version, or I mean, his old films are sort of like a celluloid version of a tabloid newspaper, but Marianne and Leonard, Broomfield details the fleeting moments when his life as a young sort of up-and-coming filmmaker in the 60s intersected with the sort of tumultuous relationship between this beautiful Norwegian-born single mother named Marianne Illen, and then who was sort of the primary muse for writer, poet, and eventually singer Leonard Cohen. He even wrote a song about her called So Long, Marianne, but apparently a lot of his early songs were about her. The story begins in 1960 on a Greek island called Hydra, where Illen and Cohen met in the sort of community of creative people that were, you know, doing art and music and writing, and of course there was also a little bit of free love happening. So for a very brief time, even Broomfield, the director, was sleeping with Illen before Cohen sort of started to dominate her world. The film doesn't really try to be a complete biography of either of its subjects, although it does sort of touch on some highlights more in Cohen's life. We do learn that Marianne kind of eventually when the relationship kind of fractured, that she went on and got married, but was still very much a part of Cohen's, if not his life, then certainly his thoughts over the 50 years or so, or maybe even more than that, that they knew each other. And it kind of ends with this beautiful moment when the two of them literally died within a couple months of each other, separately. But he sent her a love letter while she was on her deathbed that is sort of legendary and has become sort of the stuff of myth, although it's read in this film. It's really quite beautiful. The film, Broomfield, of course, the danger here is that Broomfield can get almost too personal and is a little bit too much on her side when it comes to conflicts between these two. Leonard Cohen was a bit of a ladies' man when he was touring, and even maybe today they'd call him a sex addict, but and so that, you know, didn't really sit well with Marianne a lot of the time. But at the same time, on a certain level, the film is a success. Just because it does emphasize the emotional origins of a lot of Cohen's greatest music, even if the history lesson part of it leaves us a few gaps. But overall, I'd say the film is well worth watching if you have any interest, especially in Leonard Cohen and just sort of what his process was like and where his inspiration came from. And also a little bit about some of the more tumultuous years toward the end of his life. So, anyway, I think it's a terrific documentary.
Okay, great. Very, very cool. And that's playing at the Landmark and in Evanston. Landmark right. Century and in Evanston. Well, you want to continue, Steve, with some more with another documentary? What's the next one? Is Shelf Life?
We could do Shelf Life. Yeah. This is one of the, I really love this movie if for no other reason than it proves that not every documentary about Chicago has to be about something horrible. but it's anyone who lived, maybe you guys, I'm not from Chicago originally, but so maybe you guys know this, but anyone who has lived in Chicago for a long time knows that this city, well, this part I did know, was once sort of the candy capital of the world.
Yeah.
Playing home to like Brock's and Mars and Ferrara and obviously Wrigley, and dozens of these sort of mid-sized and small family-owned companies, including one called Lanzy, L-A-N-Z-Y, who had a company called Lanzy's Candy. It was founded by Elmo Lanzy in, I believe, in 1920, and he happens to be the grandfather of the filmmaker whose name is Michael Leahy. But it wasn't until 1959, when Elmo was 65, that he created something called Lanzy's Cashew Nut and Rice Crunch, which apparently became this international hit and is still craved by scores of people that remember it, which is apparently a ton of people. Do any of you guys know this? I have no I have no sense of, because apparently it went,
not in my
it
life,
was produced right? through like, no, it was apparently produced through like the '80s at least, but maybe just in like sort of specialized places. I don't know. But anyway, so the film is about, it's sort of a couple different things. One is sort of just the family history, which includes a really interesting, I guess I'd call it a mystery about the succession of the company, that the founder decided to sell the company rather than pass it on to his eldest son, which apparently was the, he was Italian. It was a very Italian thing to do, pass on the business to the eldest son, but he chose not to do that for reasons that are still not completely clear and are still a sore spot for a lot of people. So there's that mystery that runs through it. There's also a more recent endeavor by an entrepreneur to revive this particular cashew nut and rice crunch product that he loved, but he has to sort of do it without the actual formula. Although he does get help from certain family members when it comes to taste testing and just making sure the consistency is right. And I'm still not exactly sure what this thing tastes like, but because it's described in so many different ways, and now that's kind of all I want to know is what this thing tastes like. But it's a really sort of, he also interviews other families and heads of candy companies that are still family owned, some of the bigger ones that either used to be in Chicago or still are in Chicago, and so you get a little bit of that history too, of the entire city's dominance in the candy industry, and it's just a really nice, quick in and out piece that covers a lot of ground. It's really well made, and it just, like I said, it sort of gives you a nice feeling, even though there's some weird, awkward moments in it among the family members. I will say, it only had three showtimes at the Gene Siskel Film Center. One is this coming Wednesday at 9:45, but they are going to have a sampling of this new version of the cashew nut and rice crunch in the lobby afterwards. Uh-huh. So if you want to see what it is, go check it out on Wednesday.
Okay. All right. That sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. Okay. All right. All right. What's in it? You got another doc?
We have Maiden.
Okay.
Which is, in my estimation, is like an Oscar contender at this point, for many reasons. This is a story of Tracy Edwards, who in 1989, at the age of 24, became the skipper of the first ever all-female crew to enter something called the Whitbread Round the World Yacht Race, which is probably the most prestigious yacht race in the world. She didn't do this because she was trying to kickstart some sort of all-female cruise in the sport. She just wanted to show all these other crews that were entirely men that it was okay to let some women on the boat and it wouldn't sink if you did. She didn't consider herself a feminist. She was just trying to sort of infiltrate a little bit, get into these all-male crews. It's something that is still rarely done. So her effort paid off in certain ways in terms of this particular race, but it has not paid off historically to this day. Tracy's dream was opposed on all sides. Her male competitors thought an all-woman crew would never make it. The yachting press was like taking bets on when she was going to sink. And all these, you know, she never really got any sponsors who were all afraid that if the boat sank and everybody dies, it would generate horrible publicity. But director Alex Holmes uses some really great new interviews with Tracy and her crewmates to show just like this tremendous self-belief that was also coupled with these crippling doubts. I don't think this movie would really exist if they didn't have just a ton of really great onboard footage during the race. I guess the people running the race wanted to give all the boats cameras, and the women were one of the only ones to not only take the cameras but also learn to use them before they started the race. So they actually had this really beautifully shot stuff. Like I said, I don't think the documentary would be around at all, or it would be a very different one without that footage.
Okay, Steve, hang on
sure
a second.
Thing.
We're going to take a quick break here. Mm-hmm. Steve Procopi and Eric Childress are here. You guys, hang on, and we'll finish hearing Steve's review of Maiden. We're going to break here for the news, and then we'll jump back in right after this.
There's a light in the skies over
right. Welcome back. How's everybody doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here until 5 a.m. It is Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We are also going to talk about movie trilogies and what do those initials stand for and much more. Phone lines are open at 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, Facebook.com/Nick D Show. As well. Monday morning means Monday morning movie reviews. That means Steve Procopi and Eric Childress join me to review the new movies, and Eric and I will talk about box office as well. Let's get everybody back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Steve, welcome back.
Thanks.
Okay, Steve, you were talking about this documentary called Maiden. Continue.
Yes. So basically, I mean, I was just going to say, it's just really beautifully pieced together, you know, sort of moment by moment. And I won't say how it ends, but I will say that that they probably wouldn't have made a movie if it didn't end a certain, if it ended badly. So, and I'm just so, you just come out of it being so impressed with Tracy Edwards for just being human and having doubts, but also just having this confidence that her age and her experience may not have, she probably shouldn't have even had. I was lucky enough to meet her a couple weeks ago and she just floored me and we had a great talk, but, Like I said, it's a good week for documentaries in Chicago, and this is probably the best of the bunch.
Wow, okay. All right, there you go. So that's Maiden, and that's playing...
I know it's at the Landmark. It probably is other places, too,
it's
though.
It's at the Landmark, River East, and in and Evanston. So those are your places where you can see Maiden. All right, cool. All right, Eric, why don't you tell us about Cooked, Survival by Zip Code?
Okay, well, this is a documentary that Steve momentarily touched upon last week that's opening now at the Gene Siskel Film Center. It's the latest film from our Kartemquin Films, and it tells the story of the sort of infamous heat wave that took place back in July 1995 here in Chicago, where over 700 people were attributed to dying as a result of this heat wave, and a filmmaker involved kind of takes us through not just sort of an investigation as to what exactly happened in the moment. I mean, there are only so many things you can say about how heat can, you know, cause death, and, you know, there's a lot of blame game going around. Richard Daley certainly was playing a lot of different sides at the time. But it's important where this documentary ends up going, because while it's not exactly breaking the form of the documentary, it's basically the filmmaker narrating what she discovers and taking us to different aspects of sort of the root cause, potential root causes of this. Because what she finds out is that the concentration of where these deaths were happening were pretty concentrated. A lot of them happened on the south side in poor black and minority neighborhoods. And that sort of, you know, that brings us up to a whole other area that where it's not so much a failure of response by officials, but that there's a systemic problem that has been going on for decades in Chicago and probably in many places. And so where she goes, or where she kind of takes us, is trying to kind of, decipher exactly how these things could still be happening and why there isn't greater, potential responses to, a disaster like this. Is it a crisis or is it a disaster? Things like this get debated throughout the documentary. And, you know, some things I think that are kind of right on the nose. Dealing with the differences between race and class. I think, the class thing is really the kind of the root cause of this more than necessarily a racial thing. That's sort of a byproduct of, where people were able to buy housing and the sort of lack of government attention that certain areas have because they just don't feel either worthy, that the problems that are being caused there are not being caused by the people who live there, in the same way that insurance places turn down people, you know, if they don't believe your story. But then also the idea that there are so many resources put into creating sort of false training you know, avenues and whatnot for people, you know, for mainline officials to the potential to deal with tornadoes and other natural disasters that haven't actually happened in Chicago since like the 1800s, and the sort of the elaborate costs that go into the, you know, earthquake preparedness and tornado preparedness in areas that just don't see that, and, you know, can those resources be allocated to these poor neighborhoods? And these are the sort of the important questions that I think get asked throughout the film. Like I said, it doesn't exactly break the form at all, but, you know, it brings to light, you know, something that, you know, happened, you know, more than two decades ago now, and, you know, we're in the middle of July, and things are getting pretty hot again, and the climate is certainly getting worse. So there's going to be, you know, this is not going to be the last time we hear of, you know, this kind of heat wave, you know, affecting communities like this. And I think, you know, that alone makes this a documentary worth seeing.
Okay. All right, Steve, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, this is solid activist filmmaking, to be sure. There's a really, really heart-wrenching moment where that is repeated throughout the film, where the filmmaker overlays two maps. One is a map of the poorest neighborhoods in the city, with another map of where the highest concentrations of people who died in that heat wave lived, and not shockingly, they are very similar maps. And yeah, I mean, she had sort of been, to a certain degree, her family had been through this during Hurricane Sandy, the preparedness part of it, but it's actually kind of shocking what you learn about how all of this natural disaster preparedness is about fixing things after they've happened. And what she's saying is, if poverty is the real natural disaster, like, what can we do ahead of the actual disaster, the heat wave, the cold wave, the whatever, to prepare better to deal with it so that people don't die in the first place? And there's this real emphasis on just putting things back to normal after the fact, as opposed to dealing with the root causes of certain things. It's a, yeah, like I said, it's great activist filmmaking. It's a much needed history lesson, because I feel like outside of Chicago, a lot of people don't know about this, but this was huge news at the time, that this was getting covered across the world, because it was so shocking, the numbers. And it's kind of fun to remember those days when Mayor Daley would just denied the numbers entirely, even though they were right there in front of him. So anyway, it's and like I said, as our weather gets more and more unpredictable, it's definitely a possibility that something like this, either because of heat or cold, is going to happen again.
Yeah, well, this is the right week to see this movie, I guess, because
yeah.
I don't know if you guys have seen the weather forecast, but it's going to be over 90 for 7 days straight. Anyway, everybody take care of each other and be as cool as you possibly can. But it's called Cooked: Survival by Zip Code, and it's playing at the Siskel Center, correct?
It is, and it's actually playing there for 2 weeks, which is pretty rare for the Siskel to hold on to. But I mean, I think they're expecting some pretty sizable crowds. So,
yeah.
And the filmmaker is going to be there for just about every screening too. So,
okay, so you can see the director. She'll be there. Okay, cool. So that's Cooked: Survival by Zip Code. All right. All right, Steve, why don't you tell us about Stuber?
Stuber. Okay. You know, sometimes it just comes down to laughs, or lack thereof. And a few years back, the director of Stuber, this guy named Michael Dowse, made what I think is one of the great sports comedies in like the last 10 years, Goon.
I agree with you 100%.
I
love that movie. Phenomenal. Movie. Yeah.
And he proved that he had like a passion for the sport of hockey, and it made the film not only funny, but very insightful and knowing. He seems to almost have stumbled into this movie, though. I'm not even sure he knows that much about how Uber works, to be honest. But This is the story of a gruff L.A. detective named Vic Manning, played by Dave Bautista, that everyone knows from Guardians of the Galaxy. He's pursuing a very violent drug dealer, played by this great Indonesian action star named Iku Uwais, who is from the Raid movies. And this guy killed someone very close to him 6 months earlier, and Vic gets a clue that, gets a tip that he might be somewhere nearby where he can get him. But he also happens to have eye surgery on the same day as this tip comes in, which is just maybe one of the dumbest plot contrivances I've ever heard of. But it leads to him needing an Uber driver, and he gets this guy named Stu, who's played by Kumail Nanjiani of The Big Sick in Silicon Valley. And they go on a thrilling, violent, sometimes terrifying ride through some of L.A.'s worst neighborhoods.
Okay, hang on, Steve. Yeah, yeah. Hang on. We'll leave it there. We got more to talk about. We got to take a break, and we are talking about the movie Stuber. And we'll tell you more about that right after we break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And we're here, and it is Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We are going to talk about movie trilogies and what do those initials stand for and much more. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And if you want to jump in here right now, though, we are in the middle of the movie reviews. Eric Childress and Steve Procopi join me every Monday morning to review the new movies. Welcome back, Steve.
Hello.
And welcome back, Eric.
Hello.
Okay, Steve, you were telling us about Stuber.
Yes, I was. So I think it thinks it's a sort of a twist on the buddy cop movie, and I use the phrase buddy cop because Stu is, even though he's not a cop, he's sort of pretending to be one or mistaken for one for a big chunk of this movie. But it seems more intent on delivering some fairly savage and bloody action sequences, and more that than laughs, which is fine as long as the jokes that are there actually work. Unfortunately, most of them don't. And there's also this whole idea that these two guys are supposed to rub off on each other, like Stu needs to basically grow a pair to stand up for what he wants in his personal life, and Vic needs to stop being such a jerk and be a better father to his grown daughter, who's played by Natalie Morales. So much of it feels forced and prolonged and absurd, which, like I said, in certain doses and mixes might work, but here there's like one fight scene between the two guys in a sporting goods store I thought was kind of hilarious. Like I said, there are a couple moments and a couple jokes that land, but most of it just lands with a thud. There's a lot of wasted potential here. Like Betty Gilpin is here, and I think she's usually pretty good, but she is very shrill and unpleasant in this. Mira Sorvino is here as Vic's commanding officer, and again, she doesn't pan out the way it should. The most frustrating thing about Stuber is that the pairing of Nanjiani and Bautista should work. Like it feels like someone just said, well, look, let's just put these two guys next to each other and the jokes just write themselves, except they don't. The script isn't there. And instead it just feels like a gross miscalculation, the whole thing. So in the end, it's a missed opportunity. The laughs aren't there to any degree of consistency. And, that's pretty much the source of all the disappointment I've felt in this movie.
All right. Eric, what'd you think?
Well, Steve, led off in saying that, sometimes with comedies, it's all about, the laughs and how often you laugh. And in terms of an action comedy, sometimes the action can actually, be just as good, or at least one will, trump the other. And this movie doesn't have it, any consistency with either. I actually, the first act of this movie, I was actually just about with it. I thought that, that this movie was, because it had me laughing. I think there's some big laughs in the first act of this movie. Betty Gilpin isn't given much to do, but she has a line in this movie that, a cell phone in the locker room that had me laughing for about two straight minutes. I can't even say the joke on the air. I thought actually the opening action sequence, which, as brutal as it was, actually, worked. I'm just like, oh, can they keep up this kind of energy? And even as ridiculous as it is, and it is kind of ugly as the opening action scene ends up with, maybe this movie will have something, but after a half hour, pardon the pun, but this movie literally runs out of gas. And it just seems like, they got to page 30 of the script, and they're just like, well, we got nothing else. Can you guys riff for a little bit while we try to write something? And that seems like all you have for the rest of the movie. I mean, as villains go, it's not even that much of, a really menacing villain, because he's barely given any screen time in the movie. The bigger villain in the film, which gets revealed, is just so ridiculous and unconvincing that it's just like, okay, it seems like they made that up on the spot as, some sort of big twist. I like these guys so much that I just started to get sad watching it. Because I feel like the chemistry, it wants to be there. It's there for the taking, and they are really trying. And like Steve said, with the whole eye surgery thing, it's left Dave Bautista to basically do a Mr. Magoo act for the entire movie, which I thought was kind of funny in the first time he tries to drive in the first act of the movie. That actually made me laugh. But for the rest of it, where he just has to squint his way through it, and they don't even do anything clever with that to any extent. And by the end of that, I'm just kind of like, you shrug your shoulders and just like, what was that? What was the whole purpose of that? It was like Michael Dowd's, was he trying to do a kind of a satire of a 1980s action film? But it seemed like he just ended up making a straight version of one of those movies. And, sort of the macho stuff that Bautista is trying to teach Kumail throughout the movie, something that should be satirized this day and age, not really sort of used as a template for, how we're going to define these two characters.
I will say, I read Bautista say that 48 Hours was like a touchstone film for him, and I can see him pretending to do like that Nick Nolte thing, but what he doesn't seem to remember is that Nick Nolte today would not fly in those, like, playing that part. It would not.
Oh, well, no. No, and then the whole scene that you referenced in the Sporting Goods store where the two of them fight each other, I'm just like, okay, here they're just doing their 48 Hours impression here. And it just felt like so unconvincing. I was bored with that. It's like, I don't want to see these guys fighting like this. I want to see these guys ripping off each other. And, they're the big personalities that both of them have, and the sly personality that Male has, who has some good lines, in the first act. And after that, not much of anything. So, it was a long 90 minutes, for Stuber.
Yeah, it was, and there's nothing new in this movie at all. Obviously, I mean, to mention 48 Hours is like, I mean, because that's like that's the touchstone of buddy comedies, of buddy action movies. It doesn't get better than that. But I mean, again, like you said, Eric, the chemistry is there. These guys together are good. There's just nothing written, nothing. They have given nothing to do except, cliched. What the thing about this is that it is such a waste of talent. There are so many talented people in this movie that I haven't seen. When was the last time Mira Sorvino was in a movie? I mean, it's years, right? It's been years since she's been in a movie, and this, mean, this is the movie that you're coming back with? I don't know. I mean, you know, you mentioned Betty Gilpin and Karen Gillan's in this movie. I mean, it's got a really, really, you know, good cast. And you know, like, you know, a couple of the action sequences are okay, but this is as half-baked as it gets. You know, and you know, the buddy comedy thing wears out its welcome really, really quickly, despite the fact that I think both of the guys are, you know, charming elsewhere and could have worked well together. And they have moments. There are moments in the movie where, you know, because of their just singular and good personalities, they kind of, you know, they kind of rise above the material every once in a while. But man, this is as basic as it gets. And I gotta say, I was really sort of shocked by the violence. I did not expect it to be as violent as it was. I was just like, what?
So, there's that scene involving a death, involving a can of Sterno.
Yeah.
That might be the most shocking thing I see all year.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Yeah, no, I know. I did not expect it to be to go that far in terms of violence. But this is a mess. The movie's a mess. And it's too bad. And it didn't light up the box office either.
No.
Oh, so we'll get to that a little bit later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that's Stuber, not recommended by any of us. guys, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. You got Eric, we got Steve, and we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a movie that features a little alligator. So that's coming up right here on 720 WGN. Back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we got a lot more stuff to be. We're going to be talking about getting into the world of movie trilogies as well. So that's all coming up. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Right now, though, we are doing the morning, Monday morning movie reviews. And let's welcome Steve Procopi back. Steve, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Eric Childress. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Eric, tell us about Crawl.
Okay. Well, this is the latest film from Alexandra Aja. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Aja.
Okay. I say aha, but anyway. but he's a horror director, done a lot of remakes, for one. But now he's delving into alligator territory. This is the film stars Kaya Scodelario, people may know from the Maze Runner films, as a competitive swimmer, I guess, who is in the middle. There's a hurricane that is brewing down in Florida, and she is looking for her father, who is not picking up at his home. So she goes there to try to find him and make sure that he's safe during the hurricane. So when she shows up, she ends up in the crawl space of the house and finds that he has actually been knocked unconscious and is not looking particularly well. Also down in the crawl space with them is a gigantic alligator. So it just becomes a survival tale, whether or not the father and the daughter can get themselves out alive, while one or maybe more alligators arrive on the scene and try to get through the various obstacles that the crawl space can induce for them. That's really all you need to know about the plot of this movie. And, you know, a story like this can lead itself to be a kind of a real nifty little, you know, horror thriller type film with some potentially, it's an R-rated film, with potentially some really good kills in it. For me, though, even though this movie runs, you know, paltry about 82, 83 minutes entirely, it's an incredibly padded film, which is more or less a two-character film with a few other characters thrown in as basically munchies for the alligators. This film, you know, presents so much backstory for these two characters, and you know how he was the Barry Pepper, by the way, plays the father in the film, and how he was, you know, he was basically, you know, not just her dad but her swimming coach. Very, you know, he was very supportive, but he was also very demanding. So the relationship has been strained over the time. And, you know, now there's an opportunity for her to save her father, and him giving, you know, advice throughout this rescue attempt, that basically comes down to Barry Pepper just yelling, "Swim!" at the top of his lungs as often as possible. And I found myself incredibly bored throughout this movie, and I'm a guy that hates alligators with every fiber of my being. I'm one of these guys that I don't know why we need them. I'm sure that there's a food chain element involved somewhere along the line, but I look at that alligator in Humboldt Park, and I'm just waiting for that thing to take a bite out of one of the onlookers there, and I don't get it. So they're scary creatures to me, and this is nothing is ever good has come from an encounter with an alligator. I'm just going to say that. And so watching this movie, there's an intrinsic fear that I already have going in, and for this movie to bore me with such rank special effects, I think the special effects in this movie are really bad, and not having any real, anything clever to do with the geography of the predicament that they're in. There's not this isn't like a Don't Breathe situation or something like where we have, you know, we understand the geography of the situation and they find little clever things to do with, you know, how they're going to escape, how they're going to be rescued. None of that felt interesting to me in the slightest. I wasn't scared by any of it. Occasionally, you know, a gator jumps out of the water and snaps. And it's a very unconvincing special effect, and it's loud, but, you know, so who cares? Kai Skull of Dario, while I haven't seen all of the Maze Runner trilogy, and then this movie has basically one expression that she does for 82 minutes, and I found that incredibly disengaging. So as characters, I didn't really care whether or not they survived this ordeal with the hurricane. I kept waiting for the Equalizer to show up and battle his people somewhere along the line. That would have been a little bit more interesting. I'm not a fan of Aja's work. The Hills Have Eyes remake, the Piranha remake, they come close, but I'm not quite there. The rest of his work, High Tension and Mirrors and something else that he
horns,
did.
Horns. Horns.
Horns, yeah. I'm not a fan of Horns either. Not a particular fan of that movie. And this one, I think, is even lesser than that. So, yeah, this was just kind of a big waste of my time.
Okay. All right, Steve.
Even though I don't disagree with Eric on many of his points, I mean, look, Crawl's promises are very simple. Hurricane, flooding, and gators in your house. And that's... And all of those promises are lived up to. They don't promise you logic. They don't promise you brains. They don't promise you character development. And any attempt to do any of those things is slapped down immediately. As far as I can tell, the biggest character flaw that Barry Pepper's character has that he looks like Barry Pepper. And and by the way, thank God this girl Haley is a competitive swimmer and that her dad was her coach, because I mean, what are the odds, really? For, you know, who would have guessed? And I don't want to mislead anyone into thinking that's a plot point that comes up one or two times. It comes up like 100 times in this movie, and it's silly, and it's you know, it's probably the dumbest movie that Aja has done. But at the same time, there's a certain part of this thing that just did it for me. I didn't think the effects were that bad. I mean, it's not that hard to get water, like rippling water, wrong. And you know, it's often been said you don't watch a movie in a bubble. And, man, between the Gator in Humboldt Park and the hurricane in the Gulf Coast right now, it was really weird sitting down and watching this movie on Friday when all that's going on around you. It's just such a weird coincidence. But it is definitely not a good movie. And starting with the fact that there aren't basements in seaside Florida houses. That's just the stupidest thing I've ever seen. But there's a part of it that, like, this is a straight up monster movie as like a third string Jaws ripoff. I mean, that's all it really wants to be, and that's what it is. And if you think that sounds like your cup of tea, you'll probably enjoy the less than 90 minutes, but you'll probably also forget it by the time you get to the parking lot. So,
yeah. Well, I liked it. I had a good time. It is a stupid movie. There's no question about it. It is a stupid movie with people doing stupid things. But there are some quality kills in it. Here's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see hurricane stuff, and I wanted to see alligators eat people. And both of those things happen in this movie. So I didn't have a lot of demands for this movie. You know, all I wanted to see was alligators eating people, and I wanted to see, you know, some hurricane stuff, and that's in the movie. That's all I wanted, and that's what I got. It's 87 minutes long. I like the lead. I don't know the Maze Runner movies, but I like her. I think she's got something. And I thought she did a really nice job, you know, handling the material and doing the physical stuff. I always like Barry Pepper. I don't care what he's in. I like him. I'm a big fan of Barry Pepper, and I'd like to see him work a little bit more, even if it's in a movie as stupid as this. But it delivered for me. I mean, I'm pretty easy when it comes to stuff like this. I want to see alligators eating people, and alligators eat people in this movie. And that's what I liked about it. So, and I'm a fan of Aja's work. I'm a big fan of his. I think he's a terrific director, and I go all the way back to High Tension, which despite the fact that everybody hates the twist, I love that movie, and I think it's.
I think it's a masterpiece. I love that movie.
I adore that movie. I absolutely adore it. So I'm with this guy, and I like this, and I had a good time. Now here's the weird thing. I get home from seeing, and first of all, as you mentioned, Steve, we've got Chance the Snapper. In Humboldt Park, okay? So that's been a part of our existence now for over a week. There's this alligator that's been a part of it. I get home from seeing this movie. I'm not making this up. I get home from seeing this movie. I turn on the Three Stooges. It's an alligator episode. So the Three Stooges are with alligators, and I'm like, okay, I can't get away from it. My parents call me, because they went with me to see that. We all three of us went to see it. My parents call me about 45 minutes later, and they're like, turn on whatever channel, because Cake Boss is on. I turned it on. They had to make an alligator-shaped cake. That was on TV. It was nothing but alligators. So, but anyway.
I find it hard to believe that the entire world said, like, hey, crawl's coming out. Let's get our alligator material out there.
Yeah, I guess so, man. I guess so. I don't know. All right. Well, anyway, I liked it. I don't care. It was stupid, but, you know, I liked it. Next week, obviously, the big one is The Lion King.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I'm mostly looking forward to The Art of Self-Defense. Is that getting a wide release?
Wider. I know it's opening in like 500 theaters next week, so it'll probably expand a few more here in Chicago.
Okay.
We also have The Farewell.
The Farewell, that's right, with Awkwafina. Yeah, that looks
good. And Sword of Truth is opening next week, too.
Okay, there we
go.
That's
right.
All right, cool. Steve, thanks, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
All right, cool. See ya.
Bye.
There you go. There's Steve. Eric, you hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Eric's going to hold on. We come back. We got some box office to talk about right here on 720 WGN. Everybody, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we are here until 5 a.m. It's Monday, so that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. We're also going to talk about movie trilogies and what do those initials stand for. And we'll give you some info on that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. 312-981-7200. Steve Procopi has gone. He'll be back next week to review all the new movies as we did this week. But sticking around is Eric Childress to talk box office. Hey, Eric.
Hello.
All right. Let's see. Spider-Man Far From Home, second week in a row. As number one, $45.3 million this week, bringing its total up to $274,000. That's just in America. Wow.
Yeah, it's doing quite well. It's kind of aligning itself numbers-wise right now with Spider-Man 2, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man film, which finished with $373 million. Its second weekend was $45.1 million, so it's very close in numbers to that. The potential that, you know, I thought, you know, I had a think that I had a chance to get over $400 million in the U.S. You know, sometimes we get hung up on these milestones a little bit because the bottom line right now is that after, 12 days or, 14 days it's been in release, the film has grossed over $847 million worldwide.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's going to become the ninth film in the Marvel Universe to gross $1 billion.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, that's just insane. I mean, really.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, that guarantees we get more Marvel movies.
Oh, most certainly.
Yeah. All right. Number
two. More Spider-Man movies.
Yeah. Number two is Toy Story 4. $20 million this week, up to $346 million nationwide, total. How's that doing?
Well, this one is still on pace for a $400 million haul. It basically the exact same third weekend that Toy Story 3 did, with $21 million. During the week, the pace came off a little bit, so the pace is about $7 million ahead of Toy Story 3 right now, which would, is probably going to come in somewhere around $410 to $420 million at the moment. And it's over $771 million worldwide, so it's approaching the billion-dollar mark as well.
Wow, man. All right.
Yeah.
Lots of people going to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And Toy Story 4, by the way, rules.
Yeah, it's great.
Number three, Crawl, $12 million. Mm-hmm. That's about what people would have expected, correct?
Yeah, that's probably exactly what I was expecting. The budget's only $13.5 million, so it's not exactly something to be raving about. Blumhouse probably would have got the movie down a little cheaper, and $12 million would have been a little bit more to celebrate. Lake Placid back in 1999 opened at $10.9 million. I'm going to do alligator movie comparisons, and that grossed $31 million. But an alligator movie that I like, actually, Lake Placid.
Lake Placid.
Lake Placid's a fun movie.
That's great. And I also love Alligator from 1980 with Robert Forrest.
Well, that's the alligator movie.
John Sayles, baby. John Sayles.
Absolutely. That's right. That's right. So that movie opened to $10.9 million back in 1999. That would be about $16 million today.
Yeah. That's because of Betty White.
Yes. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
She's got a filthy mouth in that movie, too.
He certainly does.
Oh, man. Okay, so Crawl, $12 million. That's about what everybody expected. Number four here is Stuber with $8 million. That's not good.
Yeah, I don't care what the budget is for this. It's only like $16 million, they're saying, which is really light, for a movie that's like this, it seems. But $8 million, that's not going to get anyone excited. It's actually the third worst opening for a movie this year that's opened in 3,000 theaters or more.
Oof.
Only Missing Link and The Kid Who Would Be King opened to less in that many theaters.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Well, that makes me sad that Missing Link. That just makes me sad.
Yeah, that was a failure by the studio, without question.
Terrific movie. Five, yesterday, this thing is humming along, 6.7, $48 million total.
Yeah, no, yesterday is doing really well, and, just as funny coincidences are, concerned, I found this stat as well, that, I grossed $6.75 million this weekend. 9 years ago, Universal released another movie about a singer from the UK, and it grossed $6.1 million on the same weekend and had $47.8 million in the same period, and that was Get Him to the Greek.
Mm.
So just a weird little comparison there. But no, you know, yesterday's headed for over $60 million, so it's already Danny Boyle's second highest grossing movie ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you
that's
know,
a solid. That's a solid hit right there.
Yeah, that's one of the sleeper stories of the summer.
It
so
is,
far, yeah.
and they're still advertising the damn thing like crazy. You know, I mean, there's trailers for it, there are TV commercials. It's all over the internet. So
yeah,
that's a solid hit right there. From number six, Aladdin, $5.8 million, $331 million total.
Yeah, this movie is about $40 million away from a billion right now. So it's just become one of the top 50. I think it's like 47th right now, highest grossing films of all time.
Jeez,
yeah,
that, I never expected
that. Lion King's on the horizon too.
Yeah. Oh, man, I never expected that. Seven, Annabelle Comes Home, $5.5 million, $60 million total. That's about what they want, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's going to come in probably somewhere in the high 60s. Might just kind of squeak over $70 million. It's the lowest total so far for all the Annabelle films, but $173 million worldwide on about a $26 million budget. Well into profit.
Okay. Number eight, Midsummer. Yeah. $3.5 million, $18 million total.
Yeah, you do the glass half full kind of situation of this. You know, this is a crazy horror movie. It's only the third film that A24 has released wide on its opening weekend, and it's going to be like the sixth highest grossing film in their history. You know, whether or not it's going to get over the witches template or witches final total of $25 million, we'll see. It looks like it's dropping pretty quickly. But you know, this is going to get somewhere in the $24 to $27 million range. It looks like.
Yeah, I just want to make sure this guy gets to direct more. That's all.
Right.
That's all. That's all I care about. As long as this guy gets to make more movies.
No, he will. He will, because that's going to be fine for A24. They will enjoy those numbers.
Okay. Number nine, The Secret Life of Pets 2, $3 million, up to $147 million. Yeah. Again, we keep talking about how this one underperformed.
Yeah, like I said, it's going to be $200 million less than the original film made, and I think that even in as tired as you know critics might be of Illumination, there was no signs that the public had grown tired of them. And I think it's just people we got Toy Story 4 coming up, kids are going to want to see The Lion King. Do we really want to waste our money on this pet sequel?
Yeah,
and some people did, but not nearly as many as they did a few years ago.
Yeah, no, I mean I remember the last one was huge.
Massive.
Yeah.
Yeah, $368 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then number 10, Men in Black International, $2.2 million, $76 million total. What was the budget for this?
$110 million, I think. Conservatively, I think they were trying to say it was around $100 million, but $110 million was the number I saw being flouted about. And, it's barely like $250 million worldwide. So this is probably the end of the Men in Black series, but who knows?
Yeah, well, it should have been. It should have never been made.
Right.
They shouldn't have made. They shouldn't have made the third one. I mean, except for Josh Brolin.
Right. Exactly.
Terrible.
And then actually, in limited release news, The Farewell opened in 4 theaters this weekend, and it had the 15th largest opening in a 4 theater launch ever.
Wow.
And people are, there's stories being written that it actually has the highest per theater average of the year. So the headlines read, Farewell beats Avengers Endgame with their per theater average, which is a little bit of a misleading headline.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it did, an $87,000 per screen average. We're talking Lady Bird, Moonlight territory for A24.
Yeah.
So if they launch this movie right, I think they're going to have. I think this could be one of the real big stories of the summer indie scene.
Yeah, and the buzz has been great. So yeah,
so 100% at Rotten Tomatoes, sold out screening at our festival. It really is one of the best movies of the year.
Awesome! I can't wait to see it. Okay, next week, obviously, The Lion King. What are we looking? What are we looking at numbers wise? You think?
Well, I think the analysts are talking like $185 million for the weekend, and I'm going to say that's low.
Okay,
I feel that this could be the one that everyone was talking. Toy Story 4 was going to be the one to get over $200 million. I think this one could do it, even though the early response from the critics are kind of saying pointless. Why do we need this? That's not going to really stop a lot of people from going to see it.
Yeah.
So this movie is going to be huge.
Yeah, and you know what? You know what? If you can take any indication from the Aladdin numbers, you know what I mean?
Right.
That's like, yeah. Okay, well, clearly people are going to want to see these movies, and that's no
yeah.
question about it.
Exactly.
So, all right. Well, I don't care about it. all right, man. So we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Eric.
Sounds good.
All right, buddy. Take care. Eric Childress, he'll join us next week with Steve to review all the new movies, and then we'll also talk about box office, too. All right, let's take a quick break here on 720 WGN. Everybody, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio and here until 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And right now, we are going to be talking about movie trilogies. And even if there are more than three, we're going to still count them as a trilogy. Like, for instance, the one that the song that was just played was from Raiders of the Lost Ark, and there are four of those movies, although people like to forget about the fourth one because it's a piece of crap. But yeah, trilogies is what we're talking about. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. I guess our text line is down. Is that right, Ben? The text line is not working?
Yeah, I'm trying everything I can. I hit it with a hammer a couple times.
Well, we'll see if we can get it back up and for people to participate that way. But if you were going to text, you should call. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll keep you posted on what's going on with the text line. But give us a call if you want to participate. 312-981-7200. So the website here is Goliath.com, and they put together the 15 best movie trilogies. And it says, we're tackling the greatest movie trilogies in the history of cinema today, but before we proceed to list what we think are the greatest three-peats around, we wanted to tell our esteemed readers just how we chose the trilogies that you'll read about. While we've tried our damnedest to make sure that the films here exist in trilogy form in today's contemporary cultural climate where sequels and reboots reign supreme, there's nothing that movie studios love more than bastardizing treasured intellectual property with gibberish sequels produced only to make a quick cash grab. While we've done our best to hone in on series that works best as trilogies, do remember that we can't control studio execs and their want and greed any better than we can convince Nicolas Cage to start taking real movie roles again. With that in mind, we think we have some great trilogies listed here, and if nothing else, it'll give you some binge-watching options for now. So here are some of their choices, and I want to hear from you guys at 312-981-7200. With your favorite movie trilogies. 312-981-7200. First one they bring up is the Terminator trilogy. Now, granted, there's more than three Terminator movies. Here's what they say. One of the greatest sci-fi series to emerge from the 80s, the Terminator franchise has fallen off a cliff in recent years, with both Terminator Salvation from 2009 and Terminator Genesis from 2015 failing to live up to the pedigree of James Cameron's first two installments. And they got a new one coming out, which looks pretty terrible. But they bring Linda Hamilton is back. I guess that's the draw. Sarah Connor comes back. But it just does not look good. Released in 1984, The Terminator was not only an impressive action movie made on a modest budget, but also found a way of telling a surprisingly emotional story involving a killer cyborg sent back through time to murder the mother of a human resistance leader from the future. The film can be credited with helping turn former Mr. Universe Arnold Schwarzenegger into a legitimate action movie star and for tackling cultural fears about artificial intelligence and the rise of computer technology. 7 years later, Cameron brought back Schwarzenegger and co-star Linda Hamilton for Terminator 2 Judgment Day, which remains one of the most influential action movies ever made, a sequel that bests its predecessor in nearly every way. T2 expanded the scope of the Terminator universe and lore while taking the risky approach of turning the franchise villain into a hero. as Schwarzenegger plays a pre-programmed Terminator sent back through time to protect the son of Hamilton, Sarah Connor. And speaking of Hamilton, she's almost unrecognizable as the battle-hardened Connor, a far cry from the innocent young waitress we meet in the first film. Sarah Connor has since become one of the most popular action movie heroines of all time, and it can be traced back to Hamilton's impressive transformation in T2. I personally like the first one the best. I like the first one more than T2. Not that Terminator 2 isn't good, because it is, but it's really good. But I still like the first one the most. I think it's I think what separates it from the second one. I mean, and again, groundbreaking special effects, big action sequences, all there in T2. And yes, and Linda Hamilton kicks ass in it. There's no question about it. But there's more heart in the first one. I actually thought the love story between Michael Biehn and Linda Hamilton was very effective in the first movie. And I admire what Cameron did on a real low budget, because obviously, you know, by the time Terminator 2 came out, you know, he'd made Aliens, he'd made The Abyss, so, like, his budgets got higher, so he could afford to do more crazy special effects and stuff like that. But I liked what he did and I liked the feel of the first movie as, like, an independent sort of a B-movie. So I like that one the most. And I like the third one. Terminator 3, The Rise of Machines, is easily the weakest of the first three Terminator movies, but it still has some redeeming qualities. The film picks up with John Connor, played by Nick Stahl, about a decade after the events of T2. In a surprising twist, Connor looks and acts nothing like the resistance leader he'll one day become, as he's living off the grid and in constant fear of Judgment Day taking place. Claire Danes came pretty close to stealing the whole movie as John's future wife, Kate Brewster, who unwittingly joins up with John after a new Terminator model, the TX, begins hunting him down. Arnold Schwarzenegger turns in a reliably competent performance as yet another T-1000 model sent back to protect Connor, even if he's a bit long in the tooth. It's a bit derivative, but worth for the ending alone, which takes a seriously shocking twist. Yeah, I back the third one. I think the third Terminator is good. I think it's good. There's great action sequences in it. The effects are good. There's an unbelievable cherry picker chase that is done almost all practical. Like, they're really putting those are real trucks and real cars smashing through buildings, and I admire that. You know, at a time when, like, you could just do any kind of car wreck or car chase thing with CGI, they had a real cherry picker smashing through, you know, buildings, and it was it's a really great car chase. The guy who directed is a guy named Jonathan Mostow, who did one of my favorite Kurt Russell movies, called Breakdown, which is a phenomenal movie. So there you go. This is the first trilogy that we're talking about, Terminator. There's a lot more here. 312-981-7200. Here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick, how's it going with you, man?
Good.
Okay, of all the trilogies, I think this is the biggest hot one that right now. Of course, I think it's the best of all the trilogies. Of course, I'm talking about John Wick.
Yeah, no, they're great. They're all three of the John Wick movies are fantastic, and the fourth one's coming out next year. So, and it's been a really strong year for Keanu Reeves this year. I mean, a really strong year. But yeah, John Wick movies are great. That's a brand new great trilogy, and it's going to continue. And each movie has made more money than the last. So we'll see it. We'll see it again. All right, Ike. Thanks.
No problem.
There you go, John Wick. Yeah, those movies rule. Keanu, strong year for Keanu. He was in that that movie on Netflix. Oh God, I'm blanking on the name of it. It was the Asian love story on Netflix. He had a cameo in that where he killed. John Wick made a ton of money, and he's in Toy Story 4. And he's hilarious in Toy Story 4. He's unbelievably funny in Toy Story 4. All right, let's see. What do you guys got for trilogies? We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Text lines seem to be down, so call instead of texting, and we'll keep you posted on what's going on with the texts. But you can call us anytime you want, 312-981-7200. We'll bust through a bunch more movie trilogies here. Even if they have more than three, we'll still count the first three as that trilogy. So 312-981-7200. Okay? All right. We'll take a quick break and come back with more right after this. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. And we're talking about the best movie trilogies. What are your favorites? 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. Also coming up, The Stories That Matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. All right, let's get back to this article on Goliath.com, and they go next with the Before Trilogy, which is Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and Before Midnight. These are Richard Linklater's really lovely movies with Julie Delpy and Ethan Hawke. Each one is great, and it's amazing how long that these movies have been around. The first one was made in 1995, the second one was 2004, and the Before Midnight was 2013. It is a fantastic trilogy, and Julie Delpy and Ethan Hawke are just great in it. There's not a false note in any of these three movies. Richard Linklater is a filmmaker preoccupied with time and how it shapes the human experience, and no part of his trilogy or his filmography better illustrates that than the Before Trilogy, which is easily his crowning achievement. Each installment checks in with the same two characters at a specific point in their lives, tracking their romance over the span of decades. The first film, Before Sunrise, introduces us to Jesse and Celine, two young dreamers who share a chance encounter on a train and decide to spend the day and night together wandering Vienna. Through many different conversations involving topics such as education, past relationships, childhood, and pretty much any other topic a pair of 20-somethings would have, we watch Jesse and Celine share a brief, intense romance before being forced to part company. Yeah, these are just great movies. Before Sunset picks up with them 9 years later when Jesse encounters Celine in a Parisian bookstore where he just so happens to be wrapping up a book tour for his own bestseller. Following a similar structure to the previous film, the pair walk through the streets of Paris while they discuss the last decade of their lives and what could have been, as it becomes increasingly clear that neither of them ever got over each other. In contrast to the youthful optimism of Sunrise, Sunset delves deeper into the sometimes harsh realities of love and relationships. But much like its predecessor, the film again concludes on a cliffhanger of sorts, as we are left to wonder whether or not Jesse decides to stay in Paris with Celine. And then the last one, Before Midnight, kind of a devastating movie of all of them. Here's what they say about it. But Before Midnight strikes a considerably different tone than the previous two films in Linklater's trilogy, exploring the realities of love once the honeymoon phase is over. We learn that Jesse and Celine are now married and are raising twin daughters together, but are now dealing with the mundane day-to-day rather than flights of fancy. Midnight is definitely the most downcast film of the trilogy, with an absolutely brutal third act. However, there is still hope to be found when paired with the other movies. It's an essential part of the story that Linklater and his stars, who helped write most of their own dialogue for each film, have crafted. While some may scoff at the notion of watching a trilogy of movies about people walking and talking, Linklater's work is arguably one of the finest achievements in modern cinema and deserves to be experienced by anyone with an interest in art that explores love and the human condition. Yeah, that third one though, man. That third one was, man. They're talking about the final third of that movie, man. I didn't know it was going to be that sort of devastating, because it really is. So let's see. Here's Evan on WGN. Hi, Evan.
Mr. Nick. Hi.
Hi.
I like the Thin Man series. I think that's gone with about three.
Well, there's more than that. I think there's like eight or nine Thin Man movies.
Oh, really? Well, yeah, they did get married, have a kid.
Yeah, no, there's a bunch of the Thin Man movies. Yeah, absolutely.
I'd have to go with the Indiana Jones, except I did not like the last one.
Well, yeah, the fourth one stinks. I think we all can admit that that fourth one was absolutely terrible. But that's a great trilogy right there. The first three Indiana Jones movies are terrific. So
yeah, my son was like not even born when the first one was out, and then we saw like the last two, and it was like, wow, this is not what I wanted.
Yeah. So. All right, Evan, thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, I don't like the third one. I know a lot of people like it, but the one with Sean Connery doesn't work for me at all. And the fourth one's unwatchable. I mean, the whole refrigerator thing is just so ridiculous.
I was a Temple of Doom fan.
Temple of Doom's my favorite of all of them.
You know why? There's alligators.
Yeah, there are alligators. Yeah, alligators. Yeah, absolutely. There's alligators. That's right. Yep. The next one here that they have here is Iron Man. The Iron Man trilogy. Iron Man 2008, Iron Man 2 in 2010, and Iron Man 3 in 2013. And I like all three of them. I know I thought the second one was okay, not great. But I thought the third one was hilarious. I thought Ben Kingsley was fantastic in the third one, and that whole twist just cracked me up.
It was him as the Mandarin. Oh, he was outstanding.
He was hilarious, and the first Iron Man's terrific. And again, it started the whole thing. There would be no Marvel Cinematic Universe without Iron Man. So it's fitting that the core trilogy of Iron Man films are some of the better titles within the larger MCU franchise. Looking back, the original film now looks positively quaint when compared to the gigantic ensemble pictures that would become to define the Marvel Studios output years later. That's true. It's really true. But it's still one of the best standalone movies in the franchise, anchored by a charismatic performance by Robert Downey Jr., who experienced an outright career revival thanks to his role as Tony Stark, Iron Man is a great origin story and helped set the tone for the many future Marvel movies with its winning mix of dramatic and comedic moments. Of course, many subsequent Marvel flicks would also adopt Iron Man's weak third act and villain template, but the film still stands as a blueprint on how to craft an engaging superhero introduction. Iron Man 2 is easily the weakest installment in the trilogy. So there you go. Okay, we got a break here, but we'll finish talking a little bit about Iron Man, and we're still working on getting the texts back up and running. But you can call us anytime you want. The phone lines are open, and we're talking about trilogies. What are the best movie trilogies? What are your favorites? Which ones are the first ones that pop into your mind? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. News is coming up after this. Welcome back. That's from one of the greatest ending scenes in the history of movies. Neo getting out of the phone booth and then just flying straight up. So, hey, we're talking about movie trilogies. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Still working on the text lines. Seem to be down. But if you want to call, phone lines are open now, 312-981-7200. I would put I know a lot of people don't like the other two Matrix movies. I like all three of them. I don't care. I think they're all really good. I think the third one is the weakest of the three, but the second one rules. Reloaded and Revolutions. I think a lot of people were disappointed with the third one, mainly because a lot of it doesn't take place in the Matrix. That's why, you know, a lot of it takes place in Zion. And people don't like Zion as much as they like the Matrix, because the Matrix is cool and you get to wear sunglasses and leather jackets and stuff. But I back all three of the Matrix movies, man. I remember the first time I saw the Matrix, I couldn't believe it. I was like, what was that? Truly revolutionary movie. And it still stands up. So that's a great trilogy, as far as I'm concerned. We were talking about the Iron Man trilogy before, and here's what they say. Iron Man 2 is easily the weakest installment in the trilogy, suffering from a rush production schedule that forced returning director Jon Favreau to stuff a bunch of Avengers setup material into the film while also trying to continue Tony Stark's story. The result is a wildly uneven film that stumbles just as often as it succeeds, and another forgettable villain, Mickey Rourke's Whiplash, and far too many subplots that don't go anywhere. We're still waiting for the return of Sam Rockwell's Justin. Oh, God, I forgot Sam Rockwell was in that. I completely forgot Sam Rockwell was in that. Still, Iron Man 2 did introduce us to Scarlett Johansson's Black Widow, who would go on to become one of MCU's most prominent female characters, as well as allowing Rodney, this time Don Cheadle replacing Terrence Howard, to climb into an Iron Man of his own, his Iron Man suit of his own, and battle alongside his best buddy, Tony. For our money, Iron Man 3 is the best installment of the trilogy, successfully picking up Tony Stark's story from where it left off in The Avengers and taking a surprisingly insightful look at the effects of PTSD in the process. Writer-director Shane Black takes over for Favreau, and the film is arguably better for it, with Black's script digging deeper into Stark's psyche while also generating some big laughs in the process. It's also finally mostly fixes the trilogy's third act curse, featuring an explosive battle against a halfway decent villain for a change. Overall, the Iron Man trilogy isn't the best that they have to offer, but it still offers one of the best three-film arcs for a superhero this side of Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy. So, yeah. I knew the Dark Knight was going to come up, even though I can't back any of those movies. Here's Paula on WGN. Hi, Paula.
Oh, hi. I thought of another one while I was waiting, but I'll start with Die Hard 1 and
yeah.
2. And The Vengeance, you know, it's okay. I mean, the first two, though, are...
Well, there's been five Die Hard movies.
Well, we're not talking all of them. We're just going to...
Yeah, yeah, there's been five. We would like to forget that the last two exist, because they were so terrible.
Yeah. And then the other one, the most obvious, of course, is The Godfather. And I did like, one and two are very, you know, artsy, let's say. But the third one is just a great entertainment, and I liked it very, very much.
Yeah, a lot of people hate the third Godfather. I think it gets a bum rap. I still think it's a good movie. I don't think it's nearly as good as the first two. It's not even close. But I think it's fine, and I think I especially think Andy Garcia is great in it. And
he needed his own cooking show after that.
Yeah, yeah. So all right, Paula.
Okay,
yeah, the Godfather trilogy. Man, did Coppola catch hell for that movie, for the Godfather Part 3, especially for casting his daughter. And Sofia Coppola, who would go on, of course, obviously, to make great movies herself. She's a terrific director. And everybody really, I mean, they went out of their way to slam her in that. I remember I just felt terrible for her. She's not great in the movie. She's not terrible, but she's not great. And there was, you know, all this talk of, like, you know, him casting his daughter, even though she can't act. And she really, I mean, I think that's why she didn't act anymore. I think that's why she stopped acting, just because of the really horrible things that people were saying about her. All right, how about this? The Pirates of the Caribbean trilogy. You got Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl. You got Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, and Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End. 2003 was the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie. I think those movies lose their charm pretty quickly. I thought the first Pirates of the Caribbean was pretty entertaining, and it came out of nowhere. Nobody expected it to be good.
I loved it.
It's you know, nobody expected it at that time. At that time, Johnny Depp was like box office poison, and you know, he couldn't open a movie, and it was this, he's in it, and it was based on an amusement park ride. It was like, what are we talking about here? So I think because expectations, or at least my expectations, were on the ground when I went to go see it, and I was just surprised by how entertaining it was. But I wasn't crazy about the ones that followed. Yeah. And they kept getting longer.
Yeah. That third one I struggled.
It was like almost 3 hours long, man. It's a fairly commonly accepted fact that the first film is in the series is usually the strongest. While this isn't always the case, most of the time, a trilogy's sequels fail to top what was originally in the original film. That's definitely the case with the Pirates of the Caribbean trilogy, which began in 2003 with Curse of the Black Pearl. That film, while remaining one of the biggest surprises hits in movie history, also introduced us to Johnny Depp's career-defining Captain Jack Sparrow, a pirate with loose morals who finds his way into a series of shenanigans over the course of this trilogy. Also starring Orlando Bloom, Keira Knightley, and Jeffrey Rush, the Pirates of the Caribbean trilogy gets worse as it progresses, with each film upping spectacle at the expense of plot. But they remain incredibly fun films, which feature some of the most impressive visual effects in the history of cinema. Yeah, I thought those movies. How many of them are there? There's like five of them, right? Didn't they make one without him? Did they make?
No, it still had him. I thought, because didn't they? They added Penelope Cruz.
The villain was Javier Bardem. I think the last one he was like that zombie dude. So I think there's four of them. There's four total, right? Yeah. Now, the last one was terrible too. Here's Dave on WGN. Hi, Dave.
Morning. How you doing, Nick?
All right. What's up?
No one mentioned the Back to the Future trilogies yet.
Yeah, they haven't been mentioned yet, but they will be, and they are right now. Which is a great trilogy. Great trilogy. All of the movies in the Back to the Future trilogy are really terrific.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Dave.
Okay.
The Back to the Future trilogy, man. I love those movies. I love those movies. I think they're just great. And obviously the first one is one of the greatest American movies ever made, ever, in the history of movies. I love the second one. I know it drives a lot of people crazy, but I love the second one. And there's so much stuff going on in that second one in terms of the complications in the plot and what they have to go back and get and fix and all that stuff. It's really crazy what Zemeckis and Gale wrote in that script, like making it so complicated for the characters and how they had to fix everything. And then the third one, I love the third one, because Zemeckis always wanted to make a Western.
That was my favorite
of all of them.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
Well, the third one's great. And another reason why is because Zemeckis always wanted to make a Western, so he got to make a Western. But on top of that, one of the reasons why I love the third one is because it's actually Doc's story. Like, it's Doc. Doc is the main character, you know? And it's about, he's got a love interest in it, and, like, the main character is Doc. And so I think that that's great. Anytime you can see more of Christopher Lloyd, that's always a good thing.
I agree. And you know I'm kind of a music guy, so anything you put ZZ Top in, I'm sorry.
Yeah. ZZ Top. Yeah, ZZ Top shows up in a cameo in the third one. No, but those are great movies. The Back to the Future trilogy, fantastic. All right, how about this? Spider-Man. Spider-Man 2002, Spider-Man 2 from 2004, and Spider-Man 3 from 2007. Spider-Man 2... These are the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies. I know there have been more Spider-Man movies, and we continue to have more. There's one out right now. It's number one at the box office. But these are the Sam Raimi movies. Sam Raimi's Spider-Man trilogy seems to have diminished somewhat in the popular consciousness since the series' mid-2000 heyday, but alongside Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy, Raimi's films have helped revitalized the stale superhero movie genre after it basically imploded in the 90s. The first installment, 2002 Spider-Man, remains one of the best superhero origin movies, with Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker transitioning from put-upon high school nerd to overconfident hero to a steady and entertaining pace, all while learning some harsh lessons about responsibility along the way. Spider-Man 2 remains the trilogy's high watermark. Actually one of the greatest superhero movies ever made. Taking everything that worked in the first film and upping the stakes considerably. For as much fun as Spider-Man 2 is to watch, it's a surprisingly downbeat film where we see Maguire's Parker struggles mightily to have any semblance of a normal life in the face of his overwhelming responsibilities as New York's favored web-slinger. Alfred Molina also turns in a fantastic performance as the villainous Doc Ock, making this is an easy film to go back and watch to this day. Spider-Man 3 is the trilogy's black sheep, and while it definitely takes a noticeable step back in quality compared to its predecessors, Raimi famously was forced to bow to studio demands and include fan-favorite villain Venom, much to his own personal displeasure. It's not as bad as its reputation would suggest. Thomas Hayden Church does what he can with the Sandman. It's visually stunning, sympathetic villain, while James Franco goes full Franco and is totally bonkers as Henry Osborn, New Goblin. It's an acquired taste for sure, but Spider-Man 3 is by no means a train wreck. It simply couldn't measure up to the ridiculously high standard set by Spider-Man 2. Yeah, I didn't hate Spider-Man 3, but Spider-Man 2, that's a tough act to follow. I mean, it really is a tough act to follow, because Spider-Man 2, that was my favorite. Spider-Man 2 was my favorite comic book movie of all time until I saw Logan, and then that changed. Because I think Logan is the best comic book movie ever made. That movie is amazing.
As much as I'd love to argue with you on it, I can't, because you're right.
I mean, Logan is just, yeah. I mean, it's an extraordinary movie.
Yeah.
You know, and they mishandled the Wolverine character so many times, you know, because there's like two or three of the movies that the Wolverine character is in, especially the one that's just called Wolverine. Which was just awful.
Yeah, it was really bad.
But when Logan, man, Logan was the Logan's the real deal, man. And I truly think that, first of all, the little girl was fantastic, but I truly think that Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart deserved Oscar nominations. Because it's two of the best performances in the history of the comic book movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the best comic book movie ever made. So, Wolverine, that's a trilogy. How many? They made like six Wolverine movies, didn't they? Five or six? Well, he's in like all the X-Men movies, too.
I was going to say, are we including X-Men movies? Or so. Yeah.
All right. Let's take a quick break here. And we want to hear from you guys. So we're still having issues with the texting here. But you can call at 312-981-7200. We're talking trilogies, movie trilogies. So which ones do you guys love? 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Monday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Still having issues with our texts, so call in. 312-981-7200. That, of course, was Mission Impossible, theme from Mission Impossible. And that's one of those movie franchises that where every single movie is good. Second one's the weakest one. I think we can all agree on that. But and it's crazy because they get better as they go along, which is a very unusual thing for a franchise. So obviously they have a trilogy involved there, but they have. So yeah, so it gets, and that last Mission Impossible, the last one that just came out, is the best of the series. It was incredible, absolutely incredible. So, we're talking about trilogies here. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Here's Mark the Bread Man. Hey, Mark.
Morning, Nick. How you doing today?
All right. What's up?
Well, I got probably one of the best trilogies plus one would be Mad Max.
Yes, without question. Without question. A fantastic trilogy. But, I mean, you know, the fourth one, the Fury Road, in my opinion, is the best of all four of them. But, yeah, even before Fury Road came out, you couldn't beat those. You couldn't beat the trilogy. I know a lot of people don't like, a lot of people aren't crazy about the third one. But I back the third one. I think it's a lot of people.
Oh no, I totally agree with you.
A lot of people bitch and moan about the kids in the movie, but I don't care. And first of all, Tina Turner's in it, so you know, There you go. So, all right, Mark. Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks, Nick. Have a good one.
Fury Road, man. I've lost track on how many times I've seen that movie.
It's been a few.
Well,
it's been a few since I've known you.
I mean, I don't even know how many times I've seen Fury Road. It is absolutely one of the greatest movies ever made.
And I'm going to agree with you. I loved three. Two Man Enter, One Man Leave.
Yeah. No. It's Beyond Thunderdome, I think is great. The thing is, though, like the Road Warrior is a tough act to follow. That's another one of these, you know, like, because the Road Warrior is an unbelievable. I mean, the first Mad Max is great, but that, I remember when I first saw the Road Warrior, I just couldn't believe what I was watching. Never seen anything like it. And that was a good summer because that was also the summer of The Thing.
Oh, wow.
What was the other, like, really? Blade Runner. So it was like, it was a good summer, man. It was a good summer. But the thing is, like, both The Thing and Blade Runner bombed at the box office. Road Warrior was a hit. But people forget, you know, when The Thing came out, nobody went to see it. It tanked. And then, like, 25 years later, people are finally like, oh, that's a great movie. It's like, where were you when the movie came out? Could have used your box office help. And the same thing with Blade Runner. Blade Runner was a bomb when it came out. So, all right. Listen, we got a break here. How about the Bourne trilogy?
That's one of my favorites.
They're good. All three of them are good. And then they brought in Jeremy Renner.
And he was good. That one, it wasn't as good as the first three, I think. But Renner did a great job.
Well, I mean, the thing about the Bourne movies was how surprising, because Matt Damon had never been like an action guy.
No,
and he kicks ass in those movies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are good ones. The Bourne trilogy. That's another set of trilogy that's good. Hey, if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Our text is down, but you can call us at 312-981-7200. We're talking movie trilogies right here on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And there you go. Coming up at 5 o'clock, it's Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. 6 o'clock, Steve Cochran with your morning drive. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've got some issues with the text, texting right now. It's not working right now. But if you want to call in, the phone lines are open at 312-981-7200. We've been talking about great movie trilogies. What are some of your favorites? Goliath.com put together a list of their choices for the best movie trilogies. And even if there's more than three in the series, we're still talking about the core first three of your trilogies. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us. Here is Evan on WGN. Hi, Evan.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Nick. I wondered if this would count. The Keith Carradine, Trouble in Mind, The Moderns, and Excuse Me.
Well, those are certainly connected by a director. I mean, those are all Alan Rudolph movies. I don't necessarily think that they're a trilogy, though. But
no, you're probably right.
Yeah, but they're all great movies. There's no question about it. So, but I would technically not think that those would be a trilogy. But thanks, Evan.
Okay.
All right. Here's Robert on WGN. Hey, Robert.
Yeah, let's go back in time to Matt Helm.
Oh my God.
Some of the worst movies that were ever made, but Dean Martin made a fortune on those.
Yeah,
but how Austin Powers, I read, became Austin Powers. They took the Matt Helm and redid it, and Austin Powers kind of draw off the...
Yeah, well, you know, the Matt Helm series was, I mean, obviously, James Bond was a big deal, and so they put...
Piggybacked.
They put Dean Martin in the role, and I haven't seen a Matt Helm movie in years.
Oh, they're fun.
I have not seen them in years, but yeah, that's a series of movies for you right there. All right, Robert, thanks.
All right, take care, mate.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. What about the Captain America series? Captain America First Avenger, Captain America Winter Soldier, Captain America Civil War.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I mean, if Iron Man's a trilogy, yeah. Then yeah.
I think Winter Soldier is the best out of all of those.
I agree.
I thought Winter Soldier was great. Really, really great. Captain America Civil War is really an Avengers movie.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I know it's called Captain America Civil War, but that's an Avengers movie. So, let's see. If you would have told us originally that Captain America of all characters would have the best self-titled series of movies in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, we would probably have laughed you out of the room. Prior to the release of Captain America First Avenger in 2011, it was doubtful whether a character as seemingly outdated as a man who dresses up in a star-spangled suit would even work on screen, let alone actually make for a quality movie. Fortunately, the First Avenger proved us wrong, as director Joe Johnston took the right approach in crafting a World War II throwback film featuring a heavy dose of nostalgia. It also helped that Chris Evans was perfectly cast in the lead role. Somehow the next film in the series was even better. The Winter Soldier transplants Captain America to modern day and charts how the character's values make him ill-equipped to handle the modern geopolitical landscape, where it's not always clear who your enemies are. The film works as a political thriller with a superhero veneer, but it's also a deeply personal story involving Steve's past, here taking the form of his former best friend turned enemy, Bucky Barnes, who is now a brainwashed assassin. Winter Soldier also shakes up the entire MCU, something that its sequel would only double down on. Captain America Civil War is the most ambitious of the Cap trilogy, roping in a number of characters from the rest of the MCU for a story that sees the Avengers pitted against each other in a war over superheroes and changing the world. While the film is essentially an Avengers film all but in name, it's very much Cap's story and picks up where the previous film left off, with Bucky still on the run and Steve desperate to clear his friend's name. So, and the Dark Knight trilogy, Batman Begins, The Dark Knight, The Dark Knight Rises. I know that I'm this is not a popular opinion, but I don't like any of these movies. Like we said before, most of the time, a trilogy's first film is the best. Of course, in Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy, it's 2008's The Dark Knight, which will be remembered as the trilogy's strongest entry. While 2005's Batman Begins did an excellent job introducing the new gritty, realistic world that Bruce Wayne and Batman, played by Christian Bale, would inhabit, it was The Dark Knight that fleshed that world out, gave it a character and flavor all its own, while introducing a brand of villain in Heath Ledger's Joker that will remain among cinema's most iconic for as long as movies are being made. The untimely death of Ledger will remain a factor in the trilogy's legacy, as will the movie's somewhat anticlimactic closing entry, The Dark Knight Rises. But overall, this trilogy is one of the strongest ever produced, and certainly the strongest superhero or hero trilogy. Yeah. And I don't like it. The Indiana Jones trilogy, which we mentioned already, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, were the trilogy's second film, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, a stronger film, there's a good chance we'd rank it very near the top of the list. Both Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark and it's not Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. I know that they've retitled it now. They wanted to throw Indiana Jones in. It's Raiders of the Lost Ark. That's what the title of the movie is. It's Raiders of the Lost Ark. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade remaining some of the best adventure movies ever made, a stronger second entry would have really pushed the trilogy towards the top. As it stands, the Indiana Jones trilogy is an awful film sandwiched between two legendary... What are you talking about? What is this person talking about? Temple of Doom is not an awful film. It's my favorite of the three. The third one's the weakest. And the fourth one,
Yeah, that doesn't even count in the category.
I'll tell you something, man. I remember my friends and I were very, very excited about that movie. And we saw it at the Davis Theater on Lincoln Avenue. And we went to our hangout there, Ricochet's, the bar right down the street on the corner. I had a few cocktails. We're very excited. Went down to the theater. Half an hour into the movie, we were like, what is this? By the time, you know, he's the atomic bomb goes off and he's fine because he's in a refrigerator. By the time that happened, and by the time Shia LaBeouf was jumping around with monkeys in trees, I was like, okay, That's how bad this Indiana Jones movie is, the last Indiana Jones movie. Here's how bad it is. It's so bad, it made Kate Blanchett not good. And that's a near impossible task, is to make Kate Blanchett not good. Because Kate Blanchett is good every single time out of the gate, but she was terrible in that movie. Yeah, we were so disappointed. My friends and I, we got back to the bar afterwards, and we were like, what is happening? Terrible. Absolutely terrible. Now, see, this is the deal right here. The next entry is the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I mean, that's, you know, it doesn't get better. Fellowship of the Ring, Two Towers, Return of the King. An astonishing trio of movies right there. An incredible accomplishment. And, you know, with a book that doesn't seem to be like the easiest thing to translate to film, but Peter Jackson not only did it, but did it in an incredible way. The first big shocker on our list here, they say at Goliath.com, is that Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings trilogy ranked far lower than it normally seen on these lists. What can we say? We just aren't the biggest fans of the flicks, so many seem to go gaga over, and despite consistent ridicule from our friends, that's our opinion, and we're sticking to it. Well, you're wrong, because it's one of the greatest trilogies in the history of movies.
Which was your favorite, Nick?
Oh, Return of the King.
Was it?
Oh, yeah.
I was a... Two Towers.
Two Towers? They're all great.
Yeah. Yeah, they all were.
But Return of the King... Return of the King is insane. But they're all great. I mean, it's an incredible trilogy. Well, Jackson no doubt crafted an exquisite fantasy viewing experience and did J.R.R. Tolkien's original work justice with his dedication to story and detail. Lord of the Rings trilogy remains a somewhat tedious viewing experience with poor pacing and some ridiculously cheesy dialogue and acting. What are you talking about? Who is this person? We understand that these are treasured films for some, but we aren't in any way trying to undo the magic present in the films. There are just trilogies we offer that are more succinct and fulfilling viewing experience. That said, if you want to lose yourself in Middle Earth for 11 or 12 hours, there's no better way to do it with these than these flicks. Yeah, they're wrong about that. The Lord of the Rings movies are amazing. Completely amazing. All right, why don't we break here for some weather, and then we'll take a commercial break, come back. Trilogies, that's what we're talking about. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Here's your forecast from WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, mostly sunny, warm, temperatures in the upper 80s or low 90s. For tomorrow, warm and muggy, clouds. Cloudy with highs in the upper 80s, and then for Wednesday, a chance of an isolated thunderstorm, muggy, highs around 100. By the way, Wednesday night is my outdoor screening of Caddyshack at the Murray Brothers Caddyshack, right outside the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant. We're showing it outside, and hopefully it won't rain. But by the time the sun goes down, it shouldn't be horrible to be sitting outside. So I hope you guys can all make it. You go to the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, have some dinner, and then they'll throw $10 on your tab, and that gets you into the movie. And the movie's going to start at dusk around 9 o'clock. And so you guys come on out. It's at the Crown Plaza Hotel. That's where the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant is. There's parking available in the parking lot, and we'll be in the courtyard of the hotel, the Crown Plaza Hotel, right outside of the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, and we are going to watch Caddyshack on the big screen under the stars, and it's going to be great. It's going to be this Wednesday night. So, you can call the Caddyshack restaurant, make your reservations, and we will see you there. Hopefully we'll pack the place. It'll be a nice night, and we'll watch Caddyshack under the stars right outside there of the Crown Plaza Hotel at the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant. So get there early. Get there around 7, 6:30, something like that. Have a really cool dinner. You get 15% off your food, too, at the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant. 15% off the food. They'll tack on $10 so that you can, that's the admission for the movie, and then you just walk right outside. It's right next to the restaurant. Take a seat. I'll introduce the movie, and we'll watch Caddyshack Under the Stars. That'll be Wednesday night. Thursday, mostly sunny, hot, humid. Temperatures will peak in the mid to upper 90s, and then on Friday, mostly sunny. Temperatures are, again, mid to upper 90s. It's currently 75 degrees at O'Hare, at 76 at Midway, and 76 at the lakefront. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with more here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It is Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. We are talking about movie trilogies. What are the best ones? And I'm looking at a list here from Goliath.com, and they have put in the number five slot, they put Back to the Future trilogy. In the number four spot, they put the Toy Story trilogy. And now there's a fourth one that's just as good as the other ones. All of the Toy Story movies are great. They're all great. Here is Jeffrey on WGN. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, you're on.
Yeah, there's two that, I don't know if you want to call them trilogies, but the first one is the Resident Evil series with the zombies.
Yeah.
That one, and then there's one that was a serial thing, you know, like 12 chapters, but they did three stories, and I love them. They're like the granddaddies of all those stories, is the Buster Crabbe and the Flash Gordon series.
Yeah, I used to watch those, I used to watch those regularly on Channel 9. Channel 9 used to show Flash Gordon.
Yeah, and they're available on DVD, by the way. They're outstanding.
Yeah, yeah, they're great.
I just thought I'd mention it.
All right, thanks.
Okay.
Those Resident Evil movies are unwatchable. They're terrible. Oh, what are there, like five of them, too, right?
There's like seven now.
Are there?
Six or seven. I lost track.
They're just terrible. Now, I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something out because I don't play the video game, but I mean, the movies were unwatchable.
I like the second one. Outside of that, yeah, it's hit or miss.
I just don't even remember any of them. I just know that they all kind of blend together. The only movie based on a video game that I liked, because there aren't any good movies based on video games, the only one that I liked was Silent Hill, and it was because it was just so damn weird.
Okay.
That was the only, yeah. That's the only one I, you know, was Silent Hill was the only video game based movie that I thought was any good.
Huh.
How about this one, the Dollars trilogy, Fistful of Dollars for a Few Dollars More and the Good and the Bad and the Ugly.
That's a great.
Classic.
Great, yeah.
Classic. Good and Bad and the Ugly is one of the greatest movies ever made.
I agree.
Also known as the Man with No Name trilogy, speaking to Clint Eastwood's character in these spectacular westerns. The Dollars trilogy makes its way into the third spot on our list on the strength of the trilogy's entertainment factor and its wide-reaching influence in the western and spaghetti western genres. Directed by Sergio Leone and starring Clint Eastwood, these three films are responsible for much of the popularization of the spaghetti western genre, and we commonly cite it as one of the greatest films ever produced. Also starring Lee Van Cleef. Yeah, they're classics. Absolute classics. Coming in second, The Godfather trilogy. While we're not going to have the audacity to sit here and tell you that The Godfather Part 3 is a bad film, especially not in light of what gets passed off as cinema these days, we do think that The Godfather trilogy suffers from something similar to the Indiana Jones trilogy, where two incredible films are lumped in with a third, somewhat mediocre film that seems to water down the stupendous elements of the trilogy just enough to add a tiny glimmer of doubt in its legacy. Well, it's quite possible that The Godfather and The Godfather Part 2 are the best overall films of any two on this list. We just couldn't bring ourselves to place the trilogy at number one with The Godfather Part 3 as its closing chapter, especially when the number one trilogy rocks as hard as it lands in a galaxy far, far away. So I don't know if there's any surprise here that the Star Wars trilogy is number one. Star Wars A New Hope, 1977. Empire Strikes Back, 1980. Return of the Jedi, 1983. Again, I'm not a Star Wars guy at all. And I think Star Wars, I think the first Star Wars is good. I think Empire Strikes Back is the best. And Return of the Jedi, not good. I like the new stuff. I like the new Star Wars movies.
The new ones?
Yeah.
Yeah. They've been knocking them out.
Yeah. And I personally, I think my favorite Star Wars related movie is Rogue One.
Oh, it was awesome.
Because everybody dies. I think Rogue One is great. And I know it, you know, and I liked Solo. I don't care. Everybody hated it. And I think the new trilogy is good. The J.J. Abrams reboots.
Yeah.
I think they're good. I know the last one, they caught a lot of hell on the last one, but I thought the last one was good.
I thought it was really good.
So,
and I've been a diehard fan my whole life.
I'm not a Star Wars. I'm not a Star Wars guy at all. Although I was 12 when the first one came out, so I should, you know, be a Star Wars freak, but it just didn't hit me. Back in 77 when the first one came out, I was like, whatever. But that was the same year that another science fiction movie came out. That's the one that I went nuts over, and that's Close Encounters. I went nuts over Close Encounters. My friends were going back and seeing, you know, Star Wars 15 times. I was going back and seeing Close Encounters. I thought Close Encounters was, I still, one of my favorite movies of all time. But that's the one that captured my imagination. Everybody went nuts over Star Wars. I went nuts over Close Encounters. So here's what they say about the Star Wars trilogy. Could this have been anything but any trilogy but Star Wars at number one, not including George Lucas's preposterous prequel trilogy? The original Star Wars films have captivated the hearts and minds of millions of viewers worldwide since their original release, and their dominating cultural presence is felt now more than ever, with nerd culture maintaining such an omnipresent role in the filmmaking world. Starring Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, Harrison Ford, like you didn't already know that, the Star Wars films remain the ultimate trilogy viewing experience. If you're one of the 17 people on the planet Earth who hasn't already seen these films, we're both happy and sad for you all at once. Sad that you've lived this much of your life without seeing Star Wars, and happy since you get to sit down and experience the joy of watching all of them for the first time. So there you go. Yeah, I don't hate the Star Wars movies. I just was never... It just didn't capture my imagination, that's all. So, yeah. All right. There you go. There's your trilogy talk. Hey, have you ever wondered what acronyms and initialisms are spelled out? Like, for instance, CVS Pharmacy? Anybody ever wonder about that? Well, I've got some answers here to what these things stand for. And we'll talk a little bit about that. You know the brands and you know the companies, but do you know what all the letters stand for? Maybe you guys do and you want to jump in. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Still working on trying to get the texting back up and running. Having some issues with it this morning. But the phone lines are open. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. So there you go. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke in just a little bit, so make sure you stay tuned for that. It is Monday morning. We always want to kick off your work week with a laugh. So my dad calls in, tells a joke, and he'll do that in a little bit. So that's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. Again, when we come back, we're going to talk about, you know the brands, you know the companies, but what do those letters stand for? 312-981-7200 if you want to participate. Okay, let's take a quick break here for the news. And we'll return right after that. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m., 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago on a Monday morning. My dad, because it's Monday, is going to call in and tell a joke because he does that every Monday. So we've got that coming up and more. Hey, our phone lines are open right here. Text, we're having some issues with the text this morning, so we're not able to receive any texts That system seems to be down right now. We're working on it, trying to get it back up. But if you want to jump in here to join in the conversation, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right. So, yeah, we're going to have a little fun here talking about, you know, the brands, you know, the companies, but do you know what all those letters stand for in the brands? So, let's see. BMW. Do you know what BMW stands for? No?
I don't.
BMW stands for... It translates to, in American to English to Bavarian Motor Works. Bavarian Motor Works.
That's well, that what BMW sense.
Stands for.
I mean, people might get confused. It was the British Motor Works.
Yeah. How about L.L. Bean? L.L. Bean is named after its founder, Leon Leonwood Bean. His middle name is Leon Wood. We've talked about that one in the past because I remember this, like, what is it? What kind of name is Leon Wood Bean? It is literally middle name is Leon Wood. Leon Wood Bean. So that's L.L. Bean. It's much catchier. How about CVS?
That's the one I've been curious about. You teased it earlier.
It was formed in 1963. Wow, CVS has been around since 1963. Wow. CVS originally stood for Consumer Value Stores. Consumer Value Stores. That's what CVS stands for. At the time, it sold health and beauty products. Only in 1967 did CVS begin operating locations with pharmacy departments, and in 1969, CVS was sold to Melville Corporation, and in 1996 it became CVS Corporation. But Consumer Value Stores, that's what CVS stands for.
See, I would when you say it that way instead of the initials, I would think it's like a Costco type place.
Yeah. You would think so. Consumer Value Stores.
Yeah. So they went a smart route, I think.
How about YKK? Those letters on seemingly every zipper. YKK is on every zipper, and it stands for Yoshida Kogyo Kabushu Kanika in Japanese, which translates to Yoshida Manufacturing Corporation. The first word refers to the founder, Tadeo Yoshida. I never even thought about that. YKK on your zipper.
Yeah.
Okay. How about A&W? A&W. The A and W of A&W were founders Roy Allen and Frank Wright. So it's Allen and Wright, A&W. Those guys founded A&W. So I guess they got the root beer. And they got the fast food. Allen and Wright. Roy Allen, Frank Wright. Do we have any A&W fast food joints in the city? They're not in the city, right?
I don't think so.
Suburbs.
They're out by me in the suburbs. But
A&W, yeah.
I'm going to investigate.
I haven't been to one of those in years. Yeah. So, I mean, I like it. I have enjoyed the food and the root beer from A&W. How about M&M's? M&M stands for Mars and Murray's. I knew Mars. Mars and Murray's referring to the founders Forrest Mars Sr. and Bruce Murray, M-U-R-R-I-E. All right. Has anybody tried those new almond butter M&M's? because they've got new like peanut butter, almond butter, and all and some other sort of butter M&Ms now.
I will have to investigate that as well
because I find the commercials I find the commercial disturbing because the M&Ms eat M&Ms, so they're what are they cannibals? So the M&Ms now cannibals? They eat the new almond butter. Yeah. They eat the dudes, and they're on stage with like almond butter all over their mouths, and so they're cannibals, which I find a little disturbing.
Yeah, I've tried the hazelnut ones, but haven't gotten to the.
I've had the hazelnut ones too. Yeah, M&Ms are good in general.
Yeah,
agreed. I mean, I like especially the peanut M&Ms.
Yeah.
Now you know who the yellow M&M is, right? The voice.
No.
It's J.K. Simmons.
Really?
Yeah, from Whiplash. That's J.K. Simmons who does the.
I love him. Like,
yellow.
All the stuff he does.
Yeah.
I just never.
He's the yellow. He's
that.
The yellow M&M.
Huh.
And of course the M&M that's being interviewed for the job as spokesperson, David Cross.
That one I knew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. How about 3M? 3M is the 3M company, which became its legal name in 2002, is an abbreviation of its former moniker, the Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing Company. The Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing Company. 3M's much quicker. How about HSBC? HSBC. HSBC stands for Hong Kong and Shanghai Banking Corporation. Okay. You guys want to jump in here? 312-981-7200 is the phone number with some of these abbreviations, and we're telling you what they mean. TCBY. TCBY. TCBY stands for the country's best yogurt. It used to mean this can't be yogurt, but they were sued by the rival frozen yogurt chain I Can't Believe It's Yogurt, which was founded 4 years before TCBY. That's another one of those things, TCBY, because people say TCBY yogurt, and that's redundant. That's like ATM machine. But TCBY used to be, this can't be yogurt. This can't be yogurt. I don't know if that's such a great name. What is this stuff? This can't be yogurt. Are there still TCBYs around? I mean, I don't go to a lot of malls or anything, but I'm still. This can't be yogurt, and then I can't believe it's yogurt. Those were two companies vying for the same thing. TCBY. I don't even know if they're still around. Does anybody know? 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in here. All right, why don't we take a quick break here, and we got some weather. And then when we come back, we'll jump back into some of the abbreviations and what do these letters mean. You know the businesses, and if you know any, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right, here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, mostly sunny, warm, temperatures in the upper 80s or low 90s. Tomorrow, warm and muggy, cloudy with highs in the upper 80s. Wednesday, chance of an isolated thunderstorm. It'll be muggy, highs around 100. For Thursday, mostly sunny, hot and humid, upper 90s possible. And for Friday, mostly sunny, temperatures will reach the mid to upper 90s. It's currently 75 degrees at O'Hare, 76 at Midway, and 76 at the lakefront. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk more. If you know the names or the meanings behind some of these names of these businesses, 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. There you go. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke in just a little bit. So it's jokey time. Right now, though, we are talking about the initials and acronyms that we're spelling out for you, of businesses. And, like, for instance, Kmart. Kmart. Kmart is not, in fact, a place to shop for K's. The K is for Kresge, as in founder Sebastian S. Kresge. That's what Kmart stands for. And that's what we're telling you about. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here is John in Park Forest. Hi, John.
Yes, hello. There is a TCBY yogurt vending machine at BP Station at Roosevelt Road and Wabash. You put in your credit card, you pick your flavor, you pick your toppings, and it makes the yogurt and drops it out at the bottom in a little cup.
Wow.
I guess it's like, I know you, a while back you had commercials for these yogurt, robot yogurt makers that you could, like, you know, invest in. So it's one of those.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. Okay. Thanks, John.
Thanks.
All right. CCBY. Vending machines. There's probably no need if they've got these vending machines at places. There's probably no need for an entire brick and mortar store. If you could just go to a gas station and pop your credit card in, get all the yogurt you want. Let's see. Here's Jim. He's in Sycamore on WGNI. Jim.
Good morning, sir.
Morning.
I wanted to toss out the labor organization AFL-CIO.
Okay.
Are you not familiar with that one?
No.
American Federation of Labor, Congress of Industrial Organizations.
Well, that's quite a long title.
They rival the Teamsters. It's quite a big labor organization, AFL-CIO.
Right. Okay.
You're familiar with all the newspapers and the WGNs and WCFLs?
Yeah. I mean, I know what WGN is, World's Greatest Newspaper. I know that.
And WGN?
That's what I just said, World's Greatest Newspaper.
Okay. And WLS?
I don't know. What, remind me.
World's Largest Store.
Ah.
And WCFL was the Chicago Federation of Labor.
Oh, all right. All right, Jim. Thanks. Take care. All right. What about this? DSW. DSW. It's a designer shoe warehouse. JCPenney. JCPenney was founded by James Cash Penney. With a name like that, he was destined to go into the world of business. James Cash Penney. His middle name is actually Cash. Cash Penney. That's J.C. Penney. How about Fiat? Fiat originally stood for Fabbrica Italiana Automobile Torino, which translates into Italian Automobile Factory of Turin. I didn't realize. I thought Fiat was a name. I thought it was someone's name. Didn't realize it stood for something. All right, how about this one? Taser. Oh, yeah, I did realize that that Taser is in fact not a word. Don't tase me, bro. The name Taser comes from Tom Swift and his electric rifle. 1911 science fiction novel by Victor Appleton that imagined an electric gun. The device from the book was the inspiration for the real-life Taser. Tom Swift and his electric rifle. That's where Taser comes from. That's weird. All right, how about this? Smart car. Smart car. A collaboration between Swatch and Mercedes, the smart in smart car, is short for Swatch Mercedes Art. Had no idea. Swatch Mercedes Art. That's what that smart, that's what the smart car stands for. All right. Didn't realize that. Swatch. Okay, that's weird. How about zip code? You guys know what zip code stands for? ZIP stands for Zone Improvement Plan. That's what your zip code stands for, Zone Improvement Plan. All right. How about the USA Patriot Act? The long acronym means, this USA Patriot Act, uniting and strengthening America by providing appropriate tools required to intercept and obstruct terrorism. I didn't realize I had no idea that that actually stood for something. USA Patriot Act. Uniting and strengthening America by providing appropriate tools required to intercept and obstruct terrorism. I can't believe that's a thing. All right. How about EOS? EOS. You might know EOS as the cosmetic company that makes those delightful spherical lip balms. The name is short for Evolution of Smooth. Never used that before in my life. I'm not a big lip balm guy. I don't use the lip balm. Like, if I get chapped lips, I just get chapped lips. How about MAC? Another makeup thing. MAC, stylized as M.A.C, stands for Makeup Art Cosmetics. So saying MAC Cosmetics is actually technically redundant because it's Makeup Art Cosmetics. It was founded by makeup artist and photographer Frank Toskin and salon owner Frank Angelo with their goal of creating cosmetics that photographed well. The very popular, I just know that that's a very popular, it's a very popular brand of makeup, at least as in the storefront theater world. That's a very popular brand of makeup. You can see these in dressing rooms. You can see, you know, the containers and dressing rooms all over the place if you're doing theater. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. PC Richard and Son. What's PC Richard and Son? Looks like an appliance store. As I'm looking at, we don't have a PC Richard and Son in this city, do we? Yeah, established in 1909. But I don't see, I've never heard of it before. PC Richard and Son.
That's a new one on me.
The store was named for founder Peter Christian Richard. Well, that makes sense. But any in the Chicago area? Has anybody ever heard of PC Richard and Son? They seem to sell refrigerators. That's this picture that I'm looking at. this picture that I'm looking at seems to be like a big warehouse full of refrigerators. Let's see. How about REI? REI. That's Recreational Equipment, Inc. All right. Well, we got some more of these. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Our text machine is down. Or our text, not machine. It's a machine. Our texting service is down. But if you want to jump in here for a call, please do at 312-981-7200. And we got the news coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Yeah. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. It is Monday morning. That means in just a few minutes, my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because that's what we do every Monday morning. My dad tells a joke. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Texts are down this morning, but the phone lines are working. So if you want to contribute, we'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We've been talking about acronyms and initials of companies and what they actually stand for, if in case you didn't know. Like, for instance, H&M. You know, the fashion retailer. The company started in 1947 as women's fashion retailer Hennes, Swedish and for hers. In 1968, they acquired hunting apparel and fishing equipment retailer Moritz Widfors. And then the name became Hennes and Moritz. And in 1974, it was just simplified to just H&M. So there you go. Boy, that's interesting. The hunting apparel and fishing equipment. Wow, okay. Let's see. Here's Jimmy on WGN. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
All right, what's up?
I'm not sure exactly what TJ Maxx stands for in terms of the acronym, but in the UK and any British Commonwealth country, there was apparently years ago when they TJ Maxx tried to expand out that way. There was already a company that had TJ as a prominent part of the name, so they had to become TK Maxx. So it's funny, you can even look on YouTube and look at like commercials for TJ Maxx in other countries, and it's the same Max for the Minimum, except it's at TK Maxx.
Oh, wow. Is there a reason? Yeah, because they already had a company with that,
right,
with that initial.
Right. Right, some other company said, hey, we've been around forever, and you can't use TJ, and so it went that way.
So
and,
just,
and real quick, go ahead.
No, they just chose K.
Yeah, exactly. So it's funny, whatever acronym TJ stood for is not even the case in other countries.
Wow, okay. What were you going to say?
I'm sorry, and in the car enthusiast scene, Ford, of course, is not real, but Ford stands for Found on Road Dead, and Fiat stands for Fix It Again, Tony.
Oh, there it is. That's Fix It Again, Tony. All right, very cool. Okay. all right, thank you.
Have a good one.
All right, Jimmy, take care. There we go. Let's see. Here's Rob on WGN. Hey, Rob.
Hey, good morning. I was asking your producer if this is a real thing. In the Blues Brothers, about 20 minutes into the film, they get pulled over, and Elwood says, I hope they don't have scamods. And Jake asked what that is. He said, State, County, Municipal Data System. And I was wondering if that was a real thing.
I think it is. I think it is a real thing. I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure that we'll have to look that one up. But I think it's real. I think that's real.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, Rob, thanks.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. How about IBM? This is pretty simple. IBM? I never knew this. The technology company's name stands for International Business Machines. That's pretty simple. International Business Machines. That's what IBM is. How about DARE? We all know that organization, DARE. That's for Drug Abuse Resistance Education. It also works as part of the motto, DARE to Resist Drugs and Violence, which was emblazoned on T-shirts that became a big fad in the 90s. DARE, Drug Abuse Resistance Education. Sotirios? Hi.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Hi. Good morning, Nick. How's it going, bro?
All right. What's up?
I have a location for a retail store for TCBY. It's on the northwest corner of 75th and Vermont Road. That's like in Downers Grove.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right behind Chili's. It's still there.
Oh, it's still there. Okay.
Yeah. And I have my own abbreviation for TCBY. It stands for They Can't Believe You.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, believe me.
All right. Thanks, man.
You're welcome. All Take care.
312-981-7200. All right. How about Geico? You know, we all see the commercials constantly. GEICO stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. Why? When GEICO first started, it was targeted to U.S. government employees and military personnel. So that's what GEICO stands for. Government Employees Insurance Company. I never knew that. How about NECO, as in NECO wafers? NECO, as in NECO wafers. NECO stands for New England Confectionery Company. Yeah. And do people still use NECO wafers to pay tolls? Because you can throw NECO wafers. It was one of those deals where you can actually throw NECO wafers into the toll basket. And it would actually it would actually count. Let's see. Here's Carl on WGN. Hi, Carl.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
Hey, IKEA. Now, my pronunciation is going to be way off, but Ingvard Compadre Elmatard Egnard. I don't know how you say it.
Uh-huh.
It's a very confusing name to say.
Yeah, well, it's Swedish. That's probably why it gets confusing to say, because it's Swedish. So it's almost as confusing as the directions to put a cabinet together. All right, Carl, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. FAO Schwartz. FAO Schwartz is Frederick August Otto Schwartz. He founded the legendary toy store, which closed in 2015, only to announce in 2017 it was coming back to New York City. Frederick August Otto Schwartz. That's where your FAO Schwartz comes from. Uh-huh. All right. How about DHL, the moving company, shipping and transportation? DHL. You see those trucks all over the place. The shipping and transportation company was christened after the last names of its founders, Adrian Dalsey, Larry Hillblom, and Robert Lyon. There's your DHL. Adrian Dalsey, Larry Hillblom, and Robert Lynn. So, there you go. Here's Tony on WGN. Hey, Tony.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
All right, what's up?
Cisco Foods.
Okay.
System Service Company.
System Service Company.
Okay. Yeah, that's what Cisco Food Service stands for.
Oh, okay. So they just threw the I in there so they can make kind of a word out of it?
No, it's S-Y-S-C-O, Cisco.
Oh, so that's what it comes down to. That's why the Y is in there.
It comes down to System Service, now you got me confused.
Uh-huh.
It's a compilation of, they buy a lot of food service companies, so that's what it became.
There you go. All right, Tony, thanks.
Thanks.
All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. How about JBL? The speaker company was founded by James B. Lansing, and its full name was James B. Lansing Sound Incorporated. But after a legal dispute about their name, the company decided to just go by JBL. That's what everybody knows him by anyway. James B. Lansing Sound Incorporated. That's not very catchy. JBL is much better. Oh, yes. How about Alf? Now, you know Alf's not his name. His name is Gordon Shumway. That's Alf's name. But the 1986 series Alf, his nickname is Alf, but it's an acronym for Alien Life Form. Good old Alf. Oh, I want to eat a cat. All right. All right, cool. We got more of these coming up here, and if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Let's break here, and when we come back, my dad is going to be on the line here to tell a joke because it's Monday morning, and it's time for a jokey time. And then we got some more of these acronyms and initials to talk about. And if you want to jump in, again, it's 312-981-7200. All right, we'll break here. My dad comes back after this with a joke.
It's the best part of the week, baby. It's time to hear something funny. Here we go with your music intro.
It's a jokey time. It's a jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Yeah. What'd I say?
It's a jokey time. It's a jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Yes, that's right. Every Monday morning, my dad calls in and tells a joke because it's a jokey time. Coming up, by the way, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, every Monday morning, my dad calls in and tells a joke, and let's get him on here. Hey, Dad.
Hey, Nick.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good. How's Mom?
Good.
Good. All right, you got a joke.
That joke, little girl said, on my first day of school, my mom and dad dropped me off at the wrong nursery. There I was, surrounded by trees and bushes.
All right. There you go.
All right, Ned.
All right, buddy. Take care. There you go. There's my dad telling a joke.
That was jokey time. It was a jokey time. Nick's dad told a joke.
That's right. He'll do it again next Monday, as we do every Monday morning. My dad calls in and tells a joke. There you go. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in here. We've been talking about acronyms and initials for companies and what they actually stand for, in case you didn't know. How about UPS? UPS is the... That's the United Parcel Service. The company's full name is United Parcel Service of America. So I knew that one. All right. How about ELF? ELF. This makeup brand's name isn't referring to the mythical creature. ELF is an acronym for eyes, lips, face. Oh. Well, that makes sense considering it's a makeup. I never heard of this brand. Well, I don't spend a lot of time buying makeup though. But ELF. Eyes, lips, face. How about PAM? The cooking spray. The cooking spray isn't named after anyone called PAM, so it's not named after anybody called PAM. That's my mom's name, by the way. It stands for Product of Arthur Meyerhoff. Product of Arthur Meyerhoff, the founder of PAM Products. That's ridiculous. Okay, Arthur Meyerhoff. How about BJ's Wholesale Club? The BJ and BJ's Wholesale Club refers to Beverly Jean Weich, who is the daughter of Marvin Weich, the company's very first president. Beverly Jean. So that's Beverly Jean. The BJ's Wholesale Club. I'm not aware of that place. How about this? CAPTCHA. That's a CAPTCHA. That code that you have to type in for security purposes stands for Completely Automated Public Touring. That's a test to tell computers and humans apart. Never knew that. How about Aflac? There's the duck right there. The American Family Life Insurance Company, of Columbus was founded in 1955, later altering its name to American Family Life Assurance Company. And Aflac was adopted in 1989. Remember when Gilbert Gottfried used to be the voice of the duck, Aflac? And he got fired for tweeting something controversial. I can't remember what it was, but that's not him doing the voice of the Aflac duck anymore. OPI, which is a nail polish brand, was originally founded as Dental Supply Odontorium Products, Inc. The company's CEO made the switch when he realized that their dental acrylics were being used in the manicure industry. That's weird. That is weird. Okay. How about LEI? Girls who grew up in the 90s and aughts will remember the denim label LEI, which still exists. The brand, which was marketed exclusively to teens and young adults, stands for Life Energy Intelligence. Never heard of it. Life Energy Intelligence. HTC. HTC is frequently cited as standing for high-tech computer company. Yes, there's only one C in the initials. But many point out the coincidence that the co-founder's name happens to be H.T. Cho. So that could fit, too. How about WWE? You know, they had to change. They used to be the WWF. The WWE, and they had to change there because of the World Wildlife Foundation. So now they're known as WWE, but they've been known as WWE for many, many years. It's straightforward. It's World Wrestling Entertainment. World Wrestling Entertainment. It used to be the World Wrestling Federation. WWF and its iconic giant panda logo stands for World Wildlife Fund. In the U.S., but in other markets in the U.S. and Canada, outside of that, it's the Worldwide Fund for Nature. And they did win that lawsuit against the against Vince McMahon. How about ESPN? ESPN, Entertainment and Sports Programming Network. Entertainment and Sports Programming Network. LG used to mean Lucky Gold Star, but now the company says its initials stand for Life's Good. Uh-huh. UNICEF. United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund. As its mandate changed, it became the United Nations Children's Fund. So that's UNICEF. How about NBC? This is an easy one, the National Broadcasting Company. ABC, American Broadcasting Company, right? Yeah, American Broadcasting Company. CBS stands for the Columbia Broadcasting System. It's an abbreviation of the full name of Columbia Broadcasting System, and in 1974, it just became CBS, Columbia Broadcasting System. CNN, that's easy, cable news network. H&R Block, the tax preparation company, was founded by brothers Henry W. Block and Richard Block. So that's why it's H&R Block. So there you go. Those are just some of the ones that we were talking about here. And those acronyms and those initials and what they stand for. Speaking of CBS, this current cast of Big Brother, they could not be stupider. You know, I've watched Big Brother. I watch every season of Big Brother, and these guys are idiots. This cast, I'm telling you. It just, I watched it last night. I'm just sitting on the couch going, you people are so stupid. But I watch. You ever watch Big Brother?
No, I never got into it. Yeah. Like, I watched like one of the very first episodes and just wasn't my thing.
Yeah. I've watched it since the beginning. Yeah. And even though, you know, I'm still watching it, even though this cast is just full of morons. It's just ridiculous. Also, last night I watched Perpetual Grace Limited.
That's right. You were telling me about that earlier.
Which my future ex-wife, Dana DiLorenzo, is a star. She wasn't on last night's episode, but the show is amazing. It's so weird. It just keeps getting weirder. And everybody on it is fantastic. The acting is just so, so great. And Dana had a killer episode a couple of weeks ago. She dominated an episode a couple of weeks ago, and it was really fun to see her. To see her on there having fun. But it's a great show, and I think people should watch it. I know it's one of those cable networks that is a little difficult because a lot of people don't have it. It's on Epix. But I highly recommend it, not just because my future ex-wife is in it, Dana DiLorenzo. But it's also a really, really good show with an incredible cast. Jimmy Simpson and Ben Kingsley, Jackie Weaver. It's an incredible cast, and it's a really, really cool show. So, all right, well, there you go. We're going to take a break here, and we got the news coming up. And then after the news, Steve Grzanich will have the opening bell, and I'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for filling in, Ben. Tom will be back tomorrow, and we've got Two for Tuesday and much more. I think we're going to have some live music in studio tomorrow. We've got a band coming in. So.